of Tapuzuayo, is the content advisor, you know all those people, and I would ask the members to introduce themselves, starting from the Honorable Adam.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Patricia M. I represent the ANC in this committee, and I hail from the Northern Cape.
Morning, Chair and Member. I'm Marukuma Sehela, member of this committee, representing the ANC from Limpopo Province. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, members, and everyone else in the House. I am Tamala Mkrepo, a member of the committee from the Eastern Cape. Thank you.
Good morning, my name is James Hoss. I'm a DA spokesperson on tourism, and I'm on the Western Cape.
Good morning, I'm Andrew Whitfield from the DA and the Eastern Cape. Thank you.
Minister Andrew T.
Thank you very much, and good morning to all honorable members and my departmental colleagues. My name is Togo Kasa, the Deputy Minister of Tourism.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, Deputy Minister. My name is Victor Tarage. I'm DTG responsible for policy and knowledge services and the acting DG as well.
Honourable Chairperson, Deputy Minister and Honourable Member. My name is Mwongwa Ramphele, DG for Domestic Tourism.
Morning, Chairperson, Members, Honourable Members. Dirk van Valkwijk, the CEO of the International Department of Tourism.
Good morning, Chairperson, Honourable Members. My name is Annie Milan. I'm the DG for International Tourism Management.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Member. My name is Nomza Mubeng. I'm responsible for government support in the department, particularly responsible for performance management. Thanks.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honourable Members. I'm Nurunisa Mula. I'm the Chief of Staff in the Ministry.
Morning, Chairperson. Morning, Members. Ralph Ackerman. I'm the Chief Financial Officer.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Leslie Peterson. I'm a secretary to the World Public Committee.
Morning, everybody. It's Ismail Hussain from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Bunkin Tuli. I'm a researcher for the committee.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Zunzoza Khaso, a director of the Secretary of this committee.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Petra Fanika. I'm a Parliamentary Liaison Officer in the Office of the Director General.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Natasha Rockman, and I'm the Parliamentary Liaison Officer for the Deputy Minister.
Morning, Chairperson. Morning, Honourable Members. I'm Praveen Naidu. I'm the MLO in the Ministry.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Deputy Minister, Honourable Members. My name is Sharif Stark. I'm the Acting Administrative Secretary in the Office of the Minister.
Thank you very much. CM, I'll hand over to you and your delegation.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. It is always appreciated from ourselves to have an opportunity to come before the Portfolio Committee and the good working relationship that we have with the committee and a commitment, upfront commitment to work and get guidance from the committee. I hope, Honorable Chair, you did receive the minister's apology for today, and I will just briefly say to the Honorable Member that we are happy to today to present before the the committee our strategic plan and annual performance plans for 2016 to 2019 2020, and that's as part of the strategic plan. We are working to realize the nation's national development plan, and as one of the six growth sectors, tourism is tasked to look into how we can contribute into the economic growth objectives of the country and create the much needed growth. And as part of it, it makes us to find ways through our programs to look into what agenda can we lead, which would form part of the transformation of the industry to ensure that we have inclusive sector growth. We will therefore allow panel guidance that Victor comes in to present. May I upfront indicate formally to the Portfolio Committee that Vita is the acting deputy of the department. The Director General is on leave that has been signed by the Minister. He's supposed to be with us ordinarily, but he's only in that leave up to the time of the contract. So we have Vita acting, and he's the one who's then going to carry us with the presentation, and is the activity of the department. He will also share with you on the developments in the tourism statistics as released yesterday, to see if we are progressing well and what are the highlights around it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Vita. The activity is that, I'm sorry, honorable members, we've got an apology of absence from honorable Kronberg, from honorable Essie, honorable Makubela Rachel, and honorable Begwe. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, honorable chairperson and honorable members. We've got a whole team here today. All the DDGs are here. The Chief Financial Officer is here. Chief Director of Governance Support is here. So they will all say something, particularly with matters that they deal with within the concept of this strategic plan. But it would, like the Deputy Minister said, it would be appropriate to just also highlight some of the developments with regards to statistics. Honorable members would be aware that for a long time we did not have tourism statistics. Were not necessarily released, and after a very long, lengthy period, we now have these major statistics. Of course, honorable members, we haven't had sufficient time, as this was yesterday, to go through the details of what is in this documentation. But suffice to say that we, with regard to the arrivals, the tourist arrivals, we have seen that overall is about 2.9% increase. But we do, however, have a concern in that the emerging markets, China, India, and Brazil in particular, seem to have had a decline. And this decline, as of now, we can't say with greater certainty what is actual cause of this decline. Of course, the environment within which we are operating at the moment did have a number of factors. Ebola was one of those factors, but we can't say with greater certainty whether that is definitely the cause of the decline. And of course, also regulatory and policy issues, particularly with regard to the immigration regulation. So we will, of course, go into the detail of this, looking at it much more in depth
and also looking at other issues related to what seems to be transpiring within industry, particularly with regards to forward bookings and so on. And that would then give us a better context, which would then also inform a better response in terms of how we actually get things on track with regards to this specific matter. That is on the what I would call the migration related statistics. But in terms of the tourism satellite account, there is a positive story there, which really is very good news, I must say. It is an indication that we've had growth in terms of jobs. This is comparative of 2011, 2012, and 2013. Honorable members would remember that the figures that we had were only up to 2012, but now we've got the 2013 figures. And these 2013 figures indicate that directly tourism is employing 655,609 people, which really is quite positive news. That is compared to 2011, which was 623. So there is movement, there is good progress, and we need to do everything to make sure that we maintain this level of momentum. Also, in terms of contribution to the tourism trade balance, which is the most important aspect really, because this contributes to the trade balance of the country, and this is really the real reason why we go out to the market for Africa and try to get people to come and spend this very important foreign currency. We have that balance at the 31,587,000, which really is quite significant, and that really is something that we are quite happy about. On the domestic front, the contribution there has for the first time gone past the 100 billion trend mark, which is 103,557,000, which really also is quite encouraging. Overall, we are contributing 4.4% to overall jobs in the economy. That is directly. So with that said, Honorable Chairperson, I would also like to share the kind of approach that we would like to take in terms of the presentation. We will have a presentation on the context or the environment within which we are operating, which will also be inclusive of the objectives that we would like to achieve. It will be inclusive of the risks that we face broadly, but it will also be inclusive of the resources that we have at our disposal to be able to roll out the plan that we're going to present here today. That would also include the trends in terms of how our budget allocations have been changing over the years in terms of the growth of the budget, which will also be outlined by the CFO. So as opposed to the traditional way of doing things where we run through the whole plan and ultimately then we say these are the resources, we want to paint that context of these are the resources that we are dealing with, and this is the plan which would be able to fit into what we have got. So that is the proposed approach that we are going to take. And as indicated earlier, we will then have the various program managers coming in also, and then outline the details of the plan. It may as well be that the confines of the space that we normally have within the stress plans and the APDs and so on may not allow for as much of the detail that we would like to give as we possibly can. But in our presentations, we'll try as much as possible, and Honorable Chairs and Honorable Members, where you feel we need to go a little bit deeper, we will do so. But we'll try to provide as much detail as we possibly can. One of the things that we did with this plan prior to concluding it, just to make sure that our plan is tied, particularly from a governance perspective, we have been working with the AG almost like to pre-audit it
so that they could preempt things that are problematic with it and so on, so that we address them beforehand and we actually go into implementation with a solid plan. The same process we followed with the Department of the DDME within the presidency, and also our own internal auditors, and we've taken all those aspects into account. We do have a technical indicator discussion, which once we have done all these presentations and so on, we'll make sure that it is available to the members as well, so that you can have a reference document in future as to what exactly do we mean by this indicator and that indicator. With those few words, Honorable Chairperson, I would then hand over to Ms. Nomzamo Bengu to deal with the first part of the presentation that deals with the context, and she will hand over to the CFO, who will then deal with the last part of that context before we go to the details of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good morning again, Honorable Member. The start of the presentation, Chair, the conversation we've had already during your visit to the National Office in November, or was it yesterday? We departed from our mandate as provided by the Minister at the beginning of the term to ensure that the kind of tourism we grow, the kind of efforts we put in the next 5 years lead us to the achievement of the 2030 vision of South Africa, which is the NDP, supported by our blueprint for the tourism sector, which is the NTSS, focusing on the various coaches of the tourism train related to our policy and regulatory mandate, the soft infrastructure that is required for tourism to grow. The tourism incentive program is one of our key programs in the next 5 years, and our our social responsibility implementation program, which is the support of government expired public works program, as well as our entity, which is responsible for marketing South Africa. So in short, this is what we have set out to do in the next 5 years, and as defined in what we call the tourism trade. We have made some adjustments to what our vision is, and now it's to lead sustainable tourism development for inclusive economic growth in South Africa. The changes that we've made to our mission have really just been editorial. They have not been as significant as the changes we've made to the vision. And the same in this space, Honorable Chair, the changes that is made to our values have really been just language editing for it to be clear about what we actually mean about those values that we want to address our organization. This particular 5-year strategic plan is the first year of us developing it under the mandate provided by the Tourism Act of 2014, which came into effect in June 2014 and defines the regulatory environment under which we will grow tourism. Our policy mandate, in line with what we have picked up in a tourism plan, is South Africa's 2030 vision, the National Development Plan, which envisions rising employment, productivity, and incomes as a way to ensure long-term solutions to achieving reduction in inequality and implementing living standards and ensuring dignified existence for all South Africans. And it recognizes tourism as one of the main drivers for employment and economic growth. The new growth path identified tourism as one of the job drivers and is aligned to our national tourism sector strategy, which provides a blueprint for the tourism sector in terms of growth targets contained in the NDP relating particularly to jobs. The white paper on the development and promotion of tourism in South Africa remains our framework and guidelines for the kind of tourism that we want to develop and provide guidelines for promotion of tourism in South Africa. As program 2 in the Department of Policy and Management is the program that is the custodian of policy development initiatives in the department. You will see that all our policy initiatives are driven from that program, including the review of the National Tourism Strategy, the development regulations for implementation of the Tourism Act, and the plan for amendment of the Tourism Act. With this in mind, then, we set out to define the goals that the department will pursue in the next 5 years. We have two goals. The first one being to achieve good corporate and cooperative governance. This one is in recognition of our mandate as a public service department responsible for public resources. We need to ensure here that we have an internal control system that provides assurance that our operations are efficient and effective, we have reliable reporting, and that we enable the organization to be in compliance with all provisions of various acts that we must comply with. Our second goal is to increase tourism sector's contribution to inclusive economic growth. This is aligned to our mandate as an economic sector department, and as indicated to the right-hand side of the slide, and it supports our contribution to the three outcomes of government, including decent employment through inclusive economic growth, comprehensive rural development, and the international related outcome, which is outcome 11. To achieve those two goals, Chair, we have developed the following strategic objectives that are the things we set out to change in the tourism space to ensure that the kind of economic growth that we have targeted both in the NTSS and in the National Development Plan is achieved. Thirdly, the first strategic objective relates again to our public service mandate and managing public resources to ensure that the employment of our resources is done in an economically efficient and effective manner. With regard to the second strategic objective, to enhance understanding and awareness of the value of tourism and its opportunities, here we need to ensure that the very, very crucial need for stakeholder relations is managed by the department, and the communications aspect as well is driven under that objective. We have our policy-making mandate as the National Department of Tourism, and that will be the various efforts in that regard will proceed under the objective to create an enabling legislative and regulatory environment for tourism development and growth. I must distinguish, Chair, between the two objectives, number 4 and number 5. First, as an organization, as a department, we have our spending power, we have a budget allocated to us, which the government imperative is that all of us, in spending our resources, we must ensure that it contributes to economic transformation in South Africa. So that is our buying power in all the sectors that we spend our money in, not just the tourism sector. The fifth objective to accelerate transformation of the tourism sector relates now to our line fashion mandate as a tourism department to ensure transformation of our sector. And the fourth objective being that to contribute when we spend the money allocated to the department, we ensure that we implemented the BBE imperatives as defined in law. And we must also to ensure that the support to the sector is enabled to grow, we ensure in terms of our policy mandate, capacity building programs, and diversification of tourism offering. Objectives 6 and 7 then relate to those two areas of focus. We have to ensure that our decision-making has a basis, and we provide knowledge services to inform policy planning and decision-making, and that is objective number 8. In collaboration as well with our entity, we pursue objectives to ensure the development of new source markets for South Africa. And in line with our international relations agenda, particularly the African agenda, we need to enhance regional tourism integration, which is pursued under objective number 10. And the objective to create employment opportunities by implementing tourism projects targeted at the unemployed defines the work that we do with our social responsibility program, which is aligned to the epidemic program of government. Chair, if you allow me, before I step off the stage, I would like to move on to slide 27 and just deal with the organizational risks as well. And then I will give space to the CFO to deal with the target related to to deal with that as well, saying I know that wasn't the department. Hey, our exercise to develop a strategy for the department departed from an environmental scale that we did of the organ for the work that we must do, defining what is our operating environment, as well as a risk assessment that was conducted within the department to ensure that we have sight of what would possibly, not always realities right now, but that could possibly impede our efforts. So we identified certain key strategic risks. The full risk register is more detailed than this. It has more operational risk, fraud risk, and strategic risk. But we selected those ones in terms of the framework provided by Treasury to us. We selected what we consider the key high-level risks that we must manage, we must mitigate against. So, Chair, stakeholder engagement, we agree that it's a crucial to the efforts of growing tourism. Just because of the nature of the sector, and therefore we must manage the risks around effectiveness of our stakeholder engagement. Our policy approach to growing tourism highlights the importance of responsible tourism, and we need to ensure that players in this space all buy into the same idea of responsible tourism, and we must therefore manage the risk around compliance with the responsible tourism standards. We also had the Tourism Act of 2014 making specific provisions for how must tourist dining be regulated in South Africa, and we need to ensure, because of its impact on the experience of tourists, domestic and international, in the country, we need to ensure that the provisions of the Act are met by those players in that sub-sector of tourist regulation, tourist guiding, excuse me. Again, we have mentioned, especially aligned to our initial, to the slide on strategic objectives, that we need to ensure that we at all times have reliable information that informs our policy making, our planning, and our decision making. And so we need to manage the risk around the reliability of the information at our disposal. Again, in support of one of our targets that will be defined later by the presentation, we've identified a risk relating to universal accessibility in parks. With regard to international tourism management, we need to ensure that we have a strategic approach to how we see tourism opportunities provided for in the international relations space. And therefore, we are managing the risk of the adequacy of that strategy, as well as our ability to leverage from international tourism agreements. And with regards to our ability to adequately source new markets for South Africa, we have developed plans to mitigate against how we play in that space to ensure that the risks in that space do not impede our strategic objectives. We think that BRICS provides a key platform for our agenda, and therefore we need to ensure that the utilization of that platform is not impeded by risks that may occur in that space. With regard to the domestic tourism management program, we need to ensure that there is adequate planning and coordination across the three spheres particularly. And to manage risks in that space, the department has identified a key mitigating strategy to deal with that. We also need to ensure that we, in support of the outcome 7 of government, we have adequate tourism growth in rural areas, and the department has prepared mitigating actions in that area. Then, Chair, as I close, the APT then indicates what series of strategic choices we have made within the resources available to implement over the next 5 years to enable us to meet our goals. The rest of the presentation then just describes that those key strategic choices we have made. I will go back to slide 11, where the CFO will start. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Jay. I just prepared an additional slide which was handed out to you, which is not part of the presentation. It's just to show you our budget trend over the MTF period, the 7 years, starting with 2011-12. If you look at that, you will see that we started with a budget of 1.2 billion in 11-12. It increased to 12-13 with 9.7% to 1.37 billion. And then you can see it goes up like that, 10.3%, 4.7%, 13.7%, 14.1%. And in the last year, the 17-18 year, we only got the inflation adjustment of 3.6%. We bring us to a total of 2.1 billion. What I did is also just to give an explanation of these increases to see the additional money that we received for instance, for tourism, for growing the African market, and also the expanded public works program, and also our tourism incentive program, the allocations that we received over the MTF. Going back to your presentation then, you will see that we focus here on the 15-16 year, because that is the year of a plan. For administration, we've got 251.7 million. Policy and knowledge services is at 1.2 billion, and that includes the PIP program as well as our transfer payment to our public entity is like tourism. International tourism has got a small budget of 46 million, only 2.6% of our total budget, and then domestic tourism has got 306.1 million, which includes also our EPWP program. If you look on the economic classification of our budget, you will see that our compensation of employees is 246 million, 13.7% of our total budget. Our goods and services is 156 million, 8.7%. And just so that we always strive to have a compensation and a goods and service budget, which is a one-to-one match. And you can see that on our goods and services, it is much lower than, for instance, our compensation budget. So our money that we need to do our work with is always getting less. Our transfers and subsidies is 1.3 billion, 77.3%. And then our capital assets is 6 billion rand. Over the NPS, you can see it goes from 1.8 billion. When it increases 14.06%, the main reason for that specific increase is the EPWP, which was cut in the previous years, but in the 16-17 year, it was remained at the same level, and we also got the additional funding, which was cut in the previous years, by gave it back to us. So basically, on 16-17, they put us at the level that we should be. Our allocation for our EPWP for that specific year is 278.8 million. Our budget for Program 1, the ministry, 35 million. Management, which is the office of the BJ and the COO, 18.6 million, and then our corporate affairs, which is our activities of the department, is 148.6 million, and then our office accommodation, our payment to public works for the lease of our building, is 28.4 million. You can see that the biggest component here is also our compensation of employees, which is 120.9 million. Increase in Program 1, 4.83%, and in RDF, 5.17%. Policy and knowledge services, here you can see that the biggest component, as I said, is tourism, 80.4%, and our tourism incentive program, 180 million, 40.8%. Our compensation for employees for this program is 39.5%, and the goods services is 19.7%, and then the transfers is the 1.1 billion, 95%. The increase over the NTS, 4.82% and 4.23%. International tourism, it's got a small budget of 46.7 million. There you can see that the biggest portion to Americas and Western Europe, that includes our transfer funding to the UNWTO. Compensation is 65.2%, a good service is 4 million, but you will see that the goods and services in the 16-17 year old is 8.1 million. The reason for that is that it is the provision of marketing material was under SA Tourism, and the money has been reverted back to the department in the 16-17 year, and that's the reason for the increase in goods and services. The transfer payments is the UNWTO and the payment to Retova, which is 6 million. The increase, you can see, 14.07%. As I said, that is because of the 3.7 million that was put back to our budget, which was in the 15-16 year now, SA Tourism. That's the reason for that increase. And then the other year, there's a 5.93% increase. In domestic tourism, there you can see the social responsibility implementation is 253 million, and then you can see in the 16-17 year it goes up to 425.3 million. So that is 82.7% of that program total budget. Compensation 49.8%, 16.3%, 49.8 million, 16.3%. And then the transfer payment is 229.8, 75.1% of that budget. Once again, you can see the increase is quite huge, 57.74. That is because of the EPWP that is back on where it should be. And then in the outer year, it's a small increase of just 1%. Thank you, Jim.
The purpose of Program 1, which is basically a support program, and I've said in quite a few occasions, this is also applicable across the department, is to provide strategic governance and risk management, legal, corporate services, information technology, finance, supply chain management, internal audit, strategic communication support services in the department. When Nomdama was presenting the NDT train, I've only realized that this program or the governance support is the front wheel of the train. So I didn't notice that until this morning, but I think what is important is that in Program 1 we need to sort of create an enabling environment for the other programs to function in the department. We need capacitating, we need to be seen that the department is accountable as far as the operations of the national department is concerned. Then on the this slide is that our strategic objective is to achieve good cooperative and corporate governance. This is the outcome that deals with all those issues that we need to comply either as prescribed by the Moneyball or the Constitution or other legislation. So the first one in this regard is a normal strategic plan and annual performance plan that needs to be prepared in line with the policy of the day and alignment with the time frame set by National Treasury and the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, and ultimately to land within this forum. Apart from that is then the quarterly reporting around our performances against the predetermined objectives. As members might know, that not only as from next year, the Accountant General will also express an opinion on the implementation of the predetermined objectives. Up to now, they are just giving an overview into the annual reports on the status, so there will be better control to make sure that when the annual financial statements, annual report are presented to Parliament, that there is also clear direction from the IG on the real achievements of our performance indicators, although at this stage they already expressed an opinion on that one. Then there is also the four quarterly reports on the integration of risks. The next deliverable is the number of public interest oversights. South African Tourism reports to the Director General as an accounting authority, to the Minister as accounting authority, but they've also got a direct line to the designated accounting officer, being the DG, around financial management and some other matters that's been spelled out in the Public Finance Management Act. So in this case, we are having the normal four oversight report as a minimum requirement. And then apart from that, there's also the minister's interaction with the board. We also take the note of their performance per quarter that needs to be signed up, and that becomes the audit trailer. So around the spend, around the performance that they presented last week here, key performance indicator and quarterly achievements meeting the target is being reported into the department. That's been managed by the CEO branch and specifically by Nongamu's unit, who are responsible for the oversight. Then we have included, which we are driving, and that's one of our contributions to make sure that jobs are created, is that we've retained our maximum vacancy rate to 8%. We've brought it down as started in 2010 from about 14% to where we are at this stage. Just to say that in the sector governance cluster, the average that government are striving to is 12%. So we set a high start target for ourselves to maintain it. And hopefully when we bring our annual report to the forum, to portfolio committee, we can show you what we've achieved. I don't want to pronounce it at this stage. Then on the percentage women representativity, we've also retained those targets to maintain a minimum of 50% women representativity, maintain disability of 5%, the requirement is 2%, and the minimum of 89% black representation. The next one is the work skills plan that is related to us in the department, whereas we've now done our strategic plan, we've done our APP, the different branches are preparing the business plans. Our business plans follows performance agreements for your SMS members and work plans for the rest of the officials. And out of that, we are identifying the skills need for the department, which then becomes the work skills plan, which we are managing to make sure that our officials are then properly skilled, upskilled in certain areas to deliver on the work plans and the performance agreements. Apart from that, there's also different policy directives issued by the DPSA. For argument's sake, if a newly appointed senior management manager has been appointed in government, they also need to go on certain courses, which is part of the DPSA upskilling program to make sure that managers are trained in specific areas to better equip them into sort of the management field. The next one is state compliance with labor relations. We've retained it on this high level, very important that we comply with all the prescripts stemming from the labor legislation and as regulations within the Public Service Act, and also dealing with matters in relation of grievances, misconduct, disputes in accordance with the bargaining count. Then the number of employment health and wellness in the program of corporate affairs has been specifically earmarked for us to deal with this, which are one of those areas we really want to make sure that we deal with the wellness and the health of our employees. So that is 40 targets around this. This might be in relation to linked to the AIDS Day, linked to breast cancer, linked to other sort of areas that we think there's a need, get specialized speakers to come and talk to the people, dealing with depression, all those type of things we are building into a program which are normally stemming from the members saying this is the areas, apart from the normal health and wellness programs that is a requirement by DSA. Then we development of ICT or Information Communication Technology Strategy. Cabinet in 2013 approved and that becomes then a directive from the Public Service Commission to have better alignment of ICT with departmental structures. So therefore what we are saying is that the ICT should support the strategy and not the strategy being a byproduct of ICT. So that's the layout by them for the implementation over 3 years. As a department, we did a first year one, the second year one, we've just completed that, which will take us into the next MTF period, which means that our document will deal with how we support PKS around the portal, knowledge management. We as a department are almost fully operational on electronic document management, getting rid of paper and have a proper archiving system around that issue, the upgrading of that, the website, and make it more accessible to people so that they can really obtain the information. There's other projects around performance management that we want to sort of include into the next rollout plan. The issue of our predetermined objectives and the evidence is all linked into our ICT status. So all of that comes something by the click of the button, AC can have it. In fact, we are really at that stage about our evidence on our performance that we don't have to give the AC files. They can go into our system and they can obtain all that information that's been uploaded that talks to a specific deliverable. Last projects we want to sort of carry in this year is better contact management, so that becomes a electronic tool used how we deal with that, so that we ultimately manage contracts better. I think through our government this is one of the challenges. We've done the business process around that, but it's now for us to implement it, make sure that we can deal with that. Perhaps we can tighten it as an extra department and make money from the other government departments. But I think that is where we would like to go, that it becomes a tool that can be used. There's a number of quarterly and annual financial statements. This is dealing with the financial management. We need to report to the minister, to the director general, and the national treasurer on a quarterly basis, which are linked to your cash flows and the deliverables. So this is the sort of normal requirement that we need to do. And then also at the end of the year, we will submit it ultimately by the end of May to the Auditor General, which audited and then comes to Parliament in August. Then the implementation of the annual internal audit plan. The internal audit plan is signed off by the Departmental Audit Committee, which is external members, presented to the Director General. And that also addresses then the risks that have been identified. So your auditor must also be aligned with your risk management processes and make sure we do it. So internal audit plan is normally a follow-up on any findings from the AG, any new areas that we've identified as risk, and it's a precautionary measure for the department to work with these processes. Then we've had the strategic objectives that are dealing with the matters into FORTAT, which is the Director General Forum, with the Cabinet Coordination Support, ultimately all those matters that are dealing in going into the Cabinet domain. And this is where we support specifically the Minister and make sure that the alignment is happening between what might happen in the clusters, which might have an impact on tourism. Just to say that from lessons learned, we've also stopped instituting a mechanism in enforcing this to make sure that we really pick up matters that might have an impact on tourism up front, so that whether it gets into the classes system or in the governance system, that we bring it to the fore and try and deal with some things up front. The second implementation of the communication strategy, in this case, is there will be the departmental strategy that has been developed, approved. Linked to that is an action plan of what we need to do. And the focus for coming years is a lot of stakeholder engagement. We also need to make sure that we bring tourism to the people and the understanding of tourism, where the minister and the DM will be the main champions of that process, alongside the Director General. Then, as far as complaints, the new Act has created a tourism complaints directorate or unit. The member has been designated by the minister as the department's designated officer dealing with complaints. Apart from that, a lot of work has been done since the Act came into force in setting up proper mechanisms to deal with this, and I thought perhaps I can just share some information. We did a framework. There was a lot of interaction with DTI, with the DBCSA, with role players, the data, to identify, because this is a mechanism for complaint, but we are not an enforcing body. We have to make sure that we start setting up standards. So we've done a map how we deal with the issues. We've got a specific questionnaire that we make available to complaints, people who have complaints. So upon the receipt of the tourist complaint, it's been recorded, it's been allocated to a specific official within that directorate, which is a lawyer. We set the standard for ourselves to acknowledge within the normal working hours or the working days, 5 days, 24-hour turnaround time to say, once we've received the complaint, that we go back and say what we are going to do with that issue. We then move it into the domain of the relevant entity, if it's hospitality, into say the Fedata of hospitality issues, and we are at the stage busy with negotiations of service level agreements for them to try and force them. Remember, this is a voluntary side for their side to respond, service level agreements for them to agree on timelines and how they will deal with their members and how we will maintain contact with the tourists. Because some of the challenges are having that are most probably at this stage, estimated 40-45% of complaints might be coming from foreigners, often experienced having, but they will be leaving the country. And you need to sort of manage that timelessly to make sure that the message they take out shows how active we will be in sort of addressing that question. So ultimately, stemming from the work we've been doing, there might be in future regulations to come out of this that will be guiding tool for us. But I think first we need to sort of get sufficient information on what is the challenges and how we're going to manage that if we implement regulations to come around this matter. And then I think the last one is the normal issue that we retained on this high level is compliance with the CCCB Act, that we only award tenders to suppliers, if it's less than 500 pounds, to service providers, if they are within the sort of contributor status level that's being earmarked by the, or being published by DPI. Thank you, Jim.
Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, I will be sharing the plan for the department that will be executed by the Branch Quality and Knowledge Services. This program, its main purpose is to support sector policy development, evaluation of sector policy and development around it, support research and knowledge management, the whole knowledge agenda for the sector, and promote transmission as well as responsible tourism. In terms of
a third indicator which relates to platforms that are there to support stakeholder engagement that is pertinent to implementation of the NTSS. We normally have these two sessions in a year, but they are quite intense sessions, which is why we list them, because they are part of the mechanism within the NTSS in terms of the collective approach to implementation of the NTSS. This is a forum chaired by the Director General, which in the main brings on board all the various role players that are supposed to report on what they have done towards the collective report consolidation, which then sets in cabinet ultimately in terms of what is being done with regards to the NTSS. In terms of policy development, we have come to the year of review of the NTSS. So this year is going to be quite an intense review process that would be inclusive of the provinces. We also will be working with the likes of SANCA. We'll be working also with other departments that have got a direct bearing on the implementation of NDSS, but also the tourism mandate in general. Suffice to say, though, that this is not a rewrite of the strategy, but we need to take stock. Every time we are implementing something, we need to take stock and be able to see whether we are still on the right track so that we can readjust if there is a necessity. Most importantly, we are going to be developing new regulations for tourist guides. And this is very, very important because the Act is provided for this, and we now need to move from the old ones that we are currently using, which is provided for currently by that, but we need to move towards the new set of regulations. Now, this is certainly an area where we will also be bringing this to the honorable members, to the committee, so that at least there is a clear understanding of what exactly will this ultimately entail. In terms of the implementation of broad-based economic empowerment codes, we would like to develop an enterprise and supplier development program, and this is aimed at acceleration of SMM empowerment within the sector. Now, I need to give a little bit more here so that you've got very clear understanding of what this is about. What we are going to do, amongst other things, is to review the environment within which SMEs are operating currently. This is necessitated by the fact that the environment has changed quite a lot. If I was to give a typical example, today's SME wants to be supported, amongst other things, on how to take advantage of the cyberspace to be able to present themselves better. They want to be able to understand how best can they make use of rating in inverted commas entities such as your TripAdvisor and so on to better position, and how do they get into a particular booking engine that they would actually have a global footprint and so on and so forth. So these are the kind of things that we are looking into. But it will be twofold. We want to be able to see what is it that needs to be done to support them to get to that point, but also what needs to be done to be able to get them to access the market. So those two things would inform that particular process. But in terms of supplier development as well, here we are saying it would be good for us to actually work out some kind of a database. Now, this database should be a database of suppliers of products that are consumed by the sector. They may not necessarily themselves be in the tourism sector, but there are certain minimum requirements that these consumers, if I was to call them big business, would require to be able to start getting into business with those small operators, those small suppliers and so on. So we need to be able to get them from the point where they are, if they are certain standards that they are supposed to comply with in terms of what is required by the supply chain, those things we should be able to deal with. At the moment, we already have a some booklet, which I think the honorable members will have access to. We couldn't bring all these things. But that booklet will be able to say, for instance, in hospitality, these are the kind of things that big businesses want to procure. In travel services, these are the kind of things that they actually want to procure. And this information was actually gathered through a survey with these big businesses across the country. And there is then a specific requirement in terms of the levels of service, the ability to negotiate a contract that is solid, that is mutually beneficial, but also the ability to service that particular contract. So these are the kind of things that we will actually be dealing with in that particular space. In terms of the local government space, we have this specific tailored program that was successfully piloted with both policymakers, and that's really a code name for councillors, as well as the practitioners, the officials within the local government space. It's got massive subscription. And at the last one, we actually ran out of space. And we were pained to say, unfortunately, there is no space to actually take more. But what we'll also be doing with that is to continuously update this as we take up the lessons. We'll get a lot of feedback, I'm sure, from the local government conference, which takes place next week, in terms of some of the developments around that. But this is going to a point where we would also like to see it decentralized so that the accessibility to this program becomes much and much easier. And then we are busy doing that with the provinces in terms of getting it to closer to the people that are supposed to go through it. Part of responsible tourism, in particular, universal accessibility, the accessibility of facilities by people with disability. We focused sharply on the provincial tax, provincial reserves, and what we would like to do here is to conduct a particular awareness program. Now, the nature of this awareness program will be almost similar to what is offered to people that work in airports. How do they actually provide their services to people with physical disability? And it's going to be in a manner that would provide more the basic awareness of what are the do's and don'ts. How do you actually facilitate that this person actually receives the same services that others are actually receiving. So that will be the first step of it. And we foresee that pack to pack, they may then be a need in future to actually then have a specialized training that dedicated specific staff that might actually be dealing with this issue. But this is largely your frontline staff as well, and people that interface with the clientele within those parks on a regular basis. The next one, we would like to intensify our support with regards to the positioning of tourist guides. And the two areas that we are highlighting here that we are going to start with, and this relates to intensified capacitation of these tourist guides. Now, what does that mean? Take care of the photo. It's a geologically rich area. Now, what we are doing, we are saying, University of Witwatersrand, for instance, has got this six-month program, which runs through exactly what the geological philosophical concepts and so on applicable to that particular environment are all about. What exactly happened, when, how did this happen, and so on and so forth. And the purpose of this is that these guys in that particular space should never find themselves in a situation where somebody specifically asks particular questions about the content related to what they are writing about, I'm not actually able to explain it. So that is one of the focus areas that we're going to focus on. It will have a very significant component of translation to it. And there's an association within that particular environment with whom we've been working, we've been also working with the DTI. The guys have already arranged themselves in the form of a co-op, which will then be in a position to actually facilitate this. So we'll also assist them with how to actually package themselves so that they can actually also be able to access the market and so on. The Rhode Island Museum, we've got a lot of things planned there with the museum, and this is done through an MOU, but specifically pertaining to these issues that we're talking about in terms of tourist guides. There are issues about standardization of the content, and there's also issues about the need to have a sense of separation between former political prisoners who are not necessarily guides. These are people telling their own story because they experienced it. So it's not like someone who reads about it and then narrates it in a particular way and so on. So there are those issues. But we're also saying there's also need for us to have someone who has the story from the harbor to the island. So you don't just get into the ship and you go all the way to the island. Only when you get to the island, into the bus, and then the story starts there. But there has to be some kind of a story that somebody who deals with those issues in the process as you're going to the island. There's also issues about what I would call the immortalization of the stories of those that have actually had a direct experience. A good case in point here is the latest documentary that was released for the former Robben Islander, the Kafada. Now, if you look at something of that sort, that the kind of direction that we're talking about, we've got full support from the authorities that deal with these issues and so on. There's lots and lots of archives that will then also be able to go into that standardization of content. We are mindful that generation is not going to be here for forever. And at some point, that story needs to be told, and that story would have been preserved. And the authorities responsible for that are really doing that. Now, how do we get it to the people? How do you digitize this information? How do you get into Robben Island? You press a button and somebody else would then be able to say, okay, oh, I made this cell. Oh, this is the story about this cell and this one, so on, so on. So those are some of the plans that we have got around this. But we want to be able to adequately position these guys, whether it means you take some of the guys and they are exposed to similar products in the country. So somebody who is telling the story of Robben Island, but they do not know the Apartheid Museum, they do not know the Freedom Park. How do you deal with that? So those are the kind of things that we are talking about, so that you've got this integrated story that then gets told properly, and it would be. And of course, the broader story in terms of exactly what happened from the days of Fatima to today's Robben Island as it is. In terms of the visitor information, we also believe that the tourist information in terms of it being more accessible, being more the richness, if I was to put it that way, of the content and so on and so forth. We'll be working with all these well-reached sites. As it is currently, our sister problem, the domestic tourism problem, has already advanced in terms of making sure that these MOUs and so on are in place and so on. So there will be very dedicated, intense capacitation of people that are dealing with information from that point of view and making sure that they've got all these necessary tools for them to be able to apply the information to the tourists in that environment. Again, in relation to the implementation of the broad-based economic empowerment code, and this is also based on the results of the previous survey with regards to the implementation, which showed that there wasn't sufficient empowerment, if I was to put it that way,
of women at executive level. When some of the reasons were advanced, it was that there isn't sufficient people within the industry with the requisite. But when you look at middle management and so on, you do find there's a lot of women there. But that's going into a pyramid. So in this particular area, what we are saying is that we want dedicated executive development programs that will actually then develop people that are within the industry, but targeting specifically women within the industry. Now, how do we believe this is going to actually make an impact? We are not looking for just some off-the-shelf program where one goes to a business school and they will teach us about how to manage money, how do you manage people, and so on. We would like to bring in captains of industry to share their own experiences, to share their own knowledge. How did they actually make it? How did they arrive at where they are? But part of the reasons why we want to go that way, we want them to impart a knowledge of actual business. So you find someone who works in a hotel or whatever setting, very good, star performer, getting bonuses year after year, but still does not know what is the exact business here. Is it people coming to the hotel and they use the beds and so on and so forth? That whole chain as to what exactly happens to get to the point where someone will then come to sleep at the hotel. That's what we want them to understand. And how do you actually get into that particular chain? That's what we want them to understand. And we are hoping that this will probably also influence, to some extent, emerging entrepreneurs from that particular group going forward. In terms of methods pertaining to destination development, I've spoken a little bit about Robben Island, but there's more with Robben Island, a lot more that we are going to do, including some of the issues that would be pertaining to the retrofitment of the energy efficiency device. But over and above that, we really want to see more and more introduction of technology within that particular environment. But we also want to see things like memorabilia that would come out of that. So when you come out of Robben Island, you're able to say, this, you can't find it anywhere else, but you can only find it in Robben Island. That, we believe, would actually be something that would create jobs, because those things would then be sold and somebody must be producing them. And those are some of the issues that are contained in our MOU with Robben Island in terms of the kind of support that we're going to give. Then we have the World Sustainable Gardens. Comparatively, if you take Stellenbosch, for instance, the last figures I saw, I think it was about 800,000 people visiting Stellenbosch in a year. With World Sustainable Gardens, it was between 250 and 300, somewhere there. There is huge space for more in that particular garden. And we see it also strategically positioned to start generating, stimulating this culture of travel, particularly for people that actually come to Johannesburg, school holidays here, and so on and so forth. And that would be something that starts there. It is also a big wedding destination, I want to put it that way. They also have a very good restaurant there. These things are not known to that extent. The integratedness of the packaging also is not something that has already come out to that extent. So that is what we are working on with that specific garden. But our MOU is actually with Sandy, and we've got great support and say from Sandy colleagues with regards to this. And we are at a point where we believe that the rollout of that, and part of it also is signage to that particular specific place. But we do believe that we can increase these numbers, of course, mindful of the issues pertaining to its own carrying capacity, the garden. But they do a lot of festivals as well, which sometimes get affected by rain, but people will still go in there and go in numbers and so on. So it's an area that we think there's huge, huge potential.
The next one, obviously, is the rollout of the resource efficiency program. Suffice to say here that our sharp focus for the coming year is going to be on energy. So we're not going to be taking water and waste and also the material that is used to build these places and so on as yet. We still want to actually get through this energy efficiency because of the current challenges with regard to energy in the country. The next one, which talks again to the universal accessibility, this specific one, we would like to have a dedicated tool that allows for assessments of the site itself, the extent to which that particular site is closer to compliance with universal accessibility, and how best can improvements be effected. And we would like to actually get head on now to get to the point where the actual assessments take place. In terms of the tourism incentive program, we have a focus on market access, we have a focus on grading, and we have got a focus on energy efficiency. This area deals with the generation of knowledge, if I was to put it like that. It's monitoring and evaluation. But why do we do this monitoring and evaluation? And also the other work that is done within that particular space. The State of Tourism Report is basically a report that enables the industry to have a good sense of where are we at this point in time. But year after year, we are now beginning to introduce a chapter by chapter that would either focus on hospitality or travel services and so on, and then look deeper into that and be able to list out what are the issues with regards to that particular sub-component and what needs to be done going forward. But it actually provides a lot of good information with regards to the state overall of what the industry is at. With regards to monitoring and evaluation that focuses on the program that we implement and so on, we'll be looking at the completed SRI projects and the ones that are operating as well. And our view always when we do these kind of things is that we want to see what more can be done, either within those ones, but also in future, so that it's a continuous improvement that is embedded in whatever we're doing. So that is the focus on that one. And of course, reviewing the NTSS does not mean we cannot report on the current NTSS. We are reviewing, but at the same time, the implementation of the other proceedings, so we also still have to report on that as well. We have a very sharp focus on knowledge generation, dissemination, and so on. And in this particular space, of course, we've got a knowledge portal, which day after day we are loading new information there, which we get feedback that it is actually useful and people are actually appreciative of that type of information that they're finding there. We want to enhance our electronic event calendar so that people at least have a clear idea what is happening where and so on, but we would like to be that stop where people would want to get this kind of information. The local government, truth be told, we have a lot of municipalities that we cannot, even if we wanted to, reach within a year. We did some basic calculations and we wanted to see how to support the different municipalities properly. If we were to spend a week per municipality, we will need 5 years. Just 1 week, go to one municipality, we will spend 5 years or now. So we believe that there is a need for us to enhance our online tools and sort of a support, internal support mechanism where they would actually then be able to say, what do I do, what is this, and so on and so forth. But it starts with these self-assessment tools, and we want to continuously improve those tools as we go on, because we don't believe that
anything is perfect, but we do believe that it's always that room. If still could come through, we should be able to try and improve this. Similarly, we are responsible to have assessment tool as well as the service excellence assessment tool, all of which are linked to the existing respective standards that are already in place with regards to those. The Vista Information Database tool, basically an online tool that would allow you to say, I'm in this area, where do I find the Vista Information Center? And that would actually assist you to be able to find it. We'll also have a booklet. I think you will also have a booklet soon. It's already there, but in terms of the distribution and so on. And that booklet actually says, we have so many, these are the places, these are the phone numbers, these are the emails, these are the people that would assist you in those and so on, whether it's private, whether it is public and so on. So it's part of the services that we're trying to render in terms of this particular area. Client-siding database, we've got that as well. But we want to actually, this one, we want to move to a point where we have an app and you can actually go there and say, I'm in this place, tourist guides that are available here, and then you will be able to get those. And it's part of the law compels us that we should actually have these surveys and it should be counted, people should be able to access it and so on. So that's what we planned. In terms of the information gateways, and this links to what Minister said, this is about enhancement of experiences. People come into the country, they should have that wow feeling that they have arrived at this place and indeed their confidence at that time has just be lifted, that they are the right place. The Oa Tambo International Gateway, will continue to maintain that and even enhance it so that we've got that gateway impact as well. And we've been working very closely with Tourism KwaZulu-Natal to, as well as the city of Tekwini, to build the new international gateway at Kishaka International Airport, and as we progress, then we'll also be moving to the Cape Town International Airport, working with the province and the city. In terms of research, you would recall, honorable members, we previously reported, if you see those studies that are in the baseline, I would like to give a bit of context in terms of this kind of thing. Because we do this research with policy in mind, so it's not just pure academic research and it becomes research for the sake of it. If we look at the baseline first, I just want to talk to the baseline a little bit. We had the Service Excellence one, which was done by the University of Johannesburg. The purpose of that is that you have some kind of a model of how to develop a Service Excellence module, if I were to put it like that. And you can have a course that runs, which is sensitive to different recipients of this course. Whether it is at a board level, you have something that is tailored for the board level. But it would actually take them through what do you need in your policy to be able to pursue service excellence in your own organization. You then get to the practitioners, what are the tools that you need to put in place at management level to be able to ensure that the organization pursues such an agenda. So we have a very clear outcome of that. We don't take ownership of that. It becomes then the universities in terms of actually being positioned to enroll that out and so on and so forth. Because they will then develop this course, they will do this, run the course, and engage with the private sector with regard to that. Similarly, if you take the cross-border, I will stop at that and then go to what we're going to do now. If you look at the cross-border one, we looked at the environment and we said, we wanted to harmonize tourist guiding across the borders. And we looked at everything else, policy, legislation, and so on, standards, regulatory mechanisms, and we realized none of this could actually be harmonized because each of the different countries is a sovereign state. So we then looked at what then can be done. And we found an opportunity in what the training
standards could be in terms of what should be some of the basics when you're dealing with these issues, to be able to gain comfort that if I am guiding in South Africa, or I'm an operator in South Africa, and I am handing over this person to another operator in Zimbabwe or in Botswana or in Mozambique, I am quite sure that the other side will provide as good a service as I would have provided. And that is what would then, and we see an opportunity here for the University of Pretoria to actually position itself as the training hub within the region in terms of these kind of things. So this is the broader implication also about just developing our capabilities and positioning the country in other aspects as well. But what I'm going to be focusing on now is local economic development. It's going to be a very, very sharp focus in terms of our research, community participation, regional competitiveness. Have a link a little bit with that guiding thing, but we're looking at a broader competitiveness. What are the elements that we must look at in terms of the regional competitiveness issue? And then service excellence then moves now to what I was talking about with regards to then beginning to develop those modules and so on and so forth. So that's the focus in terms of research in this coming financial year, which starts next Wednesday. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that marathon, and it is becoming very clear that national tourism is in the process of a very long walk, so we'll be watching that space, and I'll open to the members to have questions of clarity and actual questions. And maybe also there will be things that we'll request you to do that you've not been doing in the past because the needs that have arisen. Honorable members, the floor is open for your questions. Honorable Adams.
Thank you, Chair.
Sorry, there's still two more. I apologize.
Yeah. Chair, I was astonished that you broke here and saying that. Because we have, I think we all have a lot of questions on each program. And it's so much information. I don't know whether we will have time to ask all the questions, but just...
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, DM. I will present on Program 3, which relates to international tourism. And the purpose of this program is to provide strategic policy direction for the development of South African tourism potential throughout the regions of the world. The Honourable Members might recall that this is a new focus, relatively new focus within the department, specific focus. And we work very closely with our 120-something missions abroad. For us, they are our feet on the ground. And since our first year of operations in 2012-13, tourism has also been lifted at DERCO as a pillar of economic diplomacy. So from their side, tourism is important, and that's why we work very closely with them. We also, as Mudamu presented, our objectives include to develop new source markets that will then deal with a number of issues, for example, the identification and eliminating of barriers, and also providing the market access and awareness. A key objective for us is also regional integration, where we work with the region and Africa. Something just as a background that is not listed to a strategic level, but it's part of our day operations, is our international relations when it comes to multilateral and bilateral participation. But I will speak to it a bit at the end. With regard to our first PBI, that's where we work very, very closely with our missions to build capacity within the missions. You will realize that the officials that serve in the mission from DERCO are diplomats, and they will have a function to develop tourism. And through the 3 years, we work very closely in building capacity in terms of crafting a business plan for tourism and how, you know, the modalities of how to implement the process of the development. The computer is also now tired. I will continue to speak. With the missions, to develop the missions capacity in terms of skills. There's also a resource constraint, and what we need to bring to the fore is what are the things that one can do without spending a lot of money, because there are things that things that one can do and processes that you can put in place that won't cost a lot of money. So yes, we are working with all missions through different platforms. We do not go to all of them individually. We work with them as they come to DERCO, for example, in regions, and be part of the training, or in some instances we go to a specific mission but work with the region, with all the missions in the region, and we assist them or work with them in terms of their business planning to make sure that what they plan is aligned with what is in our plans. You will see, honourable members, that in the baseline we speak to the provision of marketing collateral to all the missions. That is something that was not done to all missions from years ago, 2 or 3 years ago. All the missions did not get marketing collateral, so we initiated a process where marketing collateral is distributed to all missions. And this year, we started it last year, and this year was the first year that it was also in different languages, not only English. So it was specific to the region in terms of the language. We have removed it from the strategic plan because it's something that now becomes operational. It will continue on an annual basis. We are looking into the way that we do it because, e-marketing also becomes very important. So we are looking at whether it's important to also distribute hard copies, or we can more move towards the electronic documents. So for PPI number one, we are building capacity with missions. We also work with Home Affairs and DTI in some instances where they request us to assist in their training. So sometimes we also train LDRs at DTI and immigration officers that working out at our ports of entry. Thank you. Let me just give you the answer. Okay. I'm just showing you. Okay. Thank you, honourable members. So that is with regard to PPI number one. The focus is on working with DERCO and our missions, but we also extend it to other departments when specific training happens. PPI number two, honourable members, in the previous years, in our working with our missions and the countries that we have MOUs with, it becomes very apparent that skills development and capacity building is a requirement from both South Africa and from other countries. So that is now becoming a big focus for us, sourcing skills opportunities for South Africa, and also sourcing opportunities or responding to requests for sharing of best practices with other countries, especially within the continent. So this year what we have done is we have worked on a framework in terms of laying out, developing the concept of, you know, what are the skills needs and what are the demands and where can we get those from, so that it's not an ad hoc, you know, we have this year, let's place it there. So so that we have a proper process. That will also form part of the work that domestic tourism will do in terms of the skills, audit, and so on. But the aim is then to source opportunities for South Africans, whether it's in the department or in the sector, to receive training in priority areas abroad, and then also to share our experience. Now, focus for the coming year is on FETS trainers. So that is training FET chief trainers through a cooperation that we have with France. We do have an MOU with them that we signed in 2002, if I remember correctly, and this is now one of the results of that will be implemented. We also see a big need in terms of language training, so that is something that we are also looking into, specifically in the case of British guides and how we can provide training and also a bit of experience of the country while the training is happening. So currently we are investigating one or two opportunities for British guides. PPA number three, that is another core area of the work that we are doing. Honourable members, honourable chair, you will realize that the picture is changing, the world is changing, the source markets, the spending, all of that is changing, and we need to have our finger on the pulse in terms of where are developing countries. So what we are doing here is we have identified a list of 20 countries which we believe is key source tourism source markets for the years to come. Some of them you will realize is also in South African tourism segments. Most of them that falls, they are within the watch list markets. So not a lot of time and resources are spent. South African tourism also has a tier segmentation of their watch list markets. So we believe that more effort must go into some of these markets. And the work that we are doing there is to identify the key constraints for us working in those markets, understanding why we're not getting what we think we should get from tourist arrivals that we think we should get from those markets. If it's regarding barriers, reserves, then we work with those and see how we can eliminate those barriers. We also work towards market access, and in the coming years we are working very closely with the TIP program, where they will provide the money, but somebody will have to implement that. And in the country that especially where South African tourism is not focusing on, it's important then for us to again work with regions to implement that. It's also important for us to make sure that what I call close the loop in terms of the market intelligence that we have, that we feed that back into the domestic side, especially in terms of product development and product diversification. So here we work especially with those countries and building the South African case, so that we can get more arrivals from those countries. Some places it's not necessarily arrivals in numbers, but more in terms of spend, especially in those countries where the spend is very high, then that is also for important source market for us. In terms of the last PPI in our strategic plan and APP is specifically towards the enhancement of regional tourism integration, which is very important. And our initiative that we started last year or in the current financial year is the ministerial roundtable at the Indaba. Last year was the inaugural session where we hosted 15 ministers, or minister hosted 15 ministers on the African continent. And that's been an opportunity for them not only to come to Indaba, but also for the ministers and the AU committee chairperson was also there to discuss issues that are pertinent to the African or on the continent. Lastly, honorable members, I mentioned in the beginning that there is work that we are doing as part of our daily operational work, and that includes our international relations. You will realize that you are aware that we have a number of bilateral agreements, around 24, of which 19 is very active, which we need to serve on a regular basis and make sure that what we do provide the assistance and things that we committed to. In terms of our participation in multilateral platforms, that's key for us to use those platforms to drive our national interests. I just want to mention one or two. In the UNWTO, South Africa sits on the Executive Council, so it's very important for us to support Minister in his role there. The Indian Ocean Ring Association Tourism has just been listed as very important there, and we will be hosting the tourism officials from the Indian Ocean Ring and co-chair the meeting on the margins of Indaba. BRICS is an important platform for us. Tourism has been listed there, and we are recommending the establishment of a tourism ministers platform within BRICS. Just as a matter of interest, research is showing that by 2015, the BRICS countries, if you take out South Africa, will be number 1, 3, 4, and 5 in the world in terms of size of GDP. So only the US that will be in between. So it is a big potential market for us and important for us to work together. So just to highlight that although it's not in the presentation on a strategic level, we do on a business plan operational level have international relations obligations that we also fulfill. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for that presentation. I've asked Ms. Ravelle to give us just a summary of domestic tourism, because in the first quarter we are going to have South African tourism and also National Department of Tourism coming to give us their full report on domestic tourism on separate visits. Thanks.
Good morning, honorable members. I'm going to present on domestic tourism. And among the other documents that we need to look into, I think domestic tourism growth strategy bears heavily on this branch. And the success factors that we need to make sure are there: the strong partnerships put to the fore, clarification of roles and responsibilities, especially between provinces, SAT and the industry, packaging correctly for our people to access, and the issues on safe and convenient access in terms of transport are very key. The programs that we have indicated here are mainly also to ensure that we inculcate the culture of travel through awareness. The first one is Tourism Month. We all know that it is a UNWTO program, which celebrated on the 27th of September every year, and we'll be celebrating that as a country. And this coming financial year, we'll be celebrating it in Limpopo, and the theme is 1 billion tourists, 1 billion opportunities. In 2012, on the 13th of December, the world received the 1 billion tourists. I think that's the theme of this nation. There are activities within Tourism Month, one in some of them being the public lecture and the student lecture. The Minister's Breakfast, where he has a session with the businesses within that province. And each province is expected to come up with an event calendar so that we are able to celebrate this in the whole country. As much as we do Tourism Month within the 6 provinces which are visited, when it comes to the event calendar, all the provinces are participating. The next one is on enterprise development.
We do have a partnership with TAP, a 50-50 basis partnership. For this coming financial year, we said our 50% portion should go for 100 rural enterprises, and their portion should go to urban enterprises, which we haven't indicated in this document. We'll only report on part of our 50%. The things that will be supporting the enterprises will be on skills training, mentorship, preparing them to access markets, and as well as helping them to set up their businesses in terms of websites and the like. We'll do a need assessment, especially for the new entrants, so that you understand what are the areas which they need support on. The other area is on capacity building programs. We have 5 of those, starting first with the NDCE. The NDCE is an annual program as well. Normally we put it three years in succession in a province. It was in the Eastern Cape for the past 3 years. It's now moving to Free State. And the main aim is to expose the learners as well as the educators in terms of the field of tourism. We have managed to also partner with CAFSITA on this aspect so that we are able to respond appropriately. The industry has also come to the fore to be able to make sure that they understand what is the industry and in the education side of things, what is it that is being done. For the past, I'll say 6 years, because we have included the KZN one, we're saying plus minus 80,000 learners exposed to this. Besides the exposure in terms of education, the learners also have an opportunity to travel and see other areas. On local government capacity building, in the past 2 years, we've been supporting 3 areas. We have added to that. It was Bembe, Kenya, Kude, and Bushbridge, and Dr. Ruth Mombati in the northwest. Now we have come up with other municipalities, especially along the Maluti Drakensberg route. The John Kavi has come in. It's John Kavi, Thabo Mofutsanyane in the Free State, as well as Alfred Nuzo, the one that has just skipped my mind. They are along the Maluti, which we will be supporting. The target is basically the SMMEs, the not-for-profit organizations, the OCOP, the COP, municipal officials, candlers, and traditional leaders, just to take them through the basics in terms of tourism information. We do request experts from the industry. Universities that are having tourism, especially UJ, is the one that supports us in this instance. Funding institutions so that they understand where to go for funding, and as well as the provincial departments in terms of economic development within the various provinces. And as I said, the workshop will have on a basis in terms of tourism development. The other area in terms of capacity building is on service excellence. In this instance, to enhance the offerings, we have identified 2 products, which is Robben Island. Basically, Robben Island, due to its iconic standing level significance in the world. And Maniani, we are currently refurbishing the resort in Northwest. Hence, we are doing this, but mainly it's because Northwest has prioritized service excellence as one of the areas that they are going to focus on. We look into the pillars of service excellence, but the main one being that we make sure that they understand the standard itself. There is an self-assessment tool that we have developed wherein the service levels should be identified to give the baseline so that over the years they will be able to see whether they are improving or not. The other is on upskilling, public awareness, and consumer feedback, which is very key, because if you need to improve your service level, you need to get feedback from your consumer. The other area is on the N12 treasure route. This route, as you know, it traverses 5 provinces, and our main focus to ensure that communities along that route do benefit from the tourism businesses that will be happening along that route. What we have found out is that 44 municipalities are within that route, plus minus 6,000 businesses also are within that route. So for us, if the route is well done, we can really achieve more out of it. The other area is we are continuing with the interpretive signage in the World Heritage Sites. We will be doing the last 3, and over the outer years, we will now be going to the National Heritage Sites to ensure that there is signage. The last one is on EPWP. The jobs for 15-16 will be 3,008. As we know that the FTEs are linked to the budget was cut to 40 million, hence the, also the reduction there. Besides the infrastructure development, there is training attached to this. Training in terms of the infrastructure related, the bricklaying, the plastering, the painting, which is an accredited training. And the first, the wine appreciation covers well, including the training on accommodation with beverage services for our tourism bodies. And placement is very key in terms of these young people getting experiential training. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Department, for all the inputs. Now I'll look at the members and see who can go up. But let me be unfair, to be fairly unfair. Honorable Matihele has requested to be excused round about 12 or up to 12. She'll be the first one. Honorable Adams has requested to be excused at first one, so she'll be the next one. Honorable Sovita, you'll be next. Honorable Foss, you will summarize. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me start by welcoming the presentation that we have just received from the department. And to start, I want to commend them for trying by all means to make sure that the target for women, the people with disability, they are really trying on that one. We thank you so much. And also the effort to try and assist women who are in higher positions to really achieve more and get into a higher position than where they are at present moment. I want to thank you for that. On page, I think it's 13, if you are using the same one that we received before, under the MTEF baselines, I sometimes don't understand how your baselines are being stated in here, because I thought the baseline is what we are moving from, but it doesn't show properly in your presentation. For example, on page 13, we just start with the year 15-16, which is the year that we have now presently. And I think our baseline was supposed to be 14-15, and we don't have anything there which shows us where are we moving from the previous year. Maybe if you can check into that one. Indeed, a lot of our budget goes for transfers. Then I want to check again here. What is the plan of the department when it comes to taxes? How are you going to be doing it? When are we going to be started doing it? Because in most cases, the entity or the people are receiving, or the individuals that are receiving those transfers, sometimes they complain that they come quite late in the year or towards the end of the financial year, as if it is a way of just dumping it there and they are unable to use it properly or maximally. So if you can just have an idea on how are you going to deal with the issue of transfers. The other one is on page 28, where it talks about requesting the or making agreement with the law enforcement agencies to assist. What is the position now if we are looking to make an agreement? Are we not having any law enforcement at the present moment to ensure that our entities are doing things in the correct way? If we can have that one as an explanation. The other one is about on page 33, but it's not 33 only. I've seen it appearing on several pages. I don't know. To me, it looks a little bit cumbersome. The talk of we put her and quarterly at the same time. I think if we're saying a quarterly organizational report, the performance report, it does say that it is four reports that we'll be submitting. We cannot say quarterly four or annual one, because once we say annually, obviously it's going to be one. So maybe we can look into that one. It's appearing on several of our slides there. As I've already commented to you on the women, the disability, how many, the percentage of the blacks that are working there, but we don't have an organogram, which I thought maybe to also be here to guide us and see how far we are on it, a populated one, indeed are we at 8% and so on. Okay, thanks. All right, the last one is on the FTEs calculation. This is a very difficult one in most of the municipalities. The people who are dealing with the officials who are dealing with the EPWP, they find it very difficult. I don't know whether we have anywhere a strategy that can assist the municipalities or those officials who are dealing with EPWP to be able to calculate this, because once it is not done properly, they are not in the position to access money for them to run this project again in the coming years. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I want to thank the department for the presentation. It is quite comprehensive, Chairperson. And I would like us to think about it, to do it in future, program by program. Because when we critique, it is not negative. It is our input to enhance the department, because we all love tourism. And my critique is not critique. As we say in Afrikaans, that kan op woont wees. And you must work on it. My first input, Jefferson, is on the criteria as set up by National Fisheries. And the criteria of the strategic planning and for APP is the principles of SMART. SMART, to be specific, to be measurable, to be achievable, realistic, relevant, and find out. And most of these criteria, I don't always find in the strategic plan. It's for me, Jefferson. I know they can't elaborate on everything. I know it. But if you say six municipalities, this is the plan. You must be specific to say which six municipalities. Why are you choosing these six municipalities? Is that to enhance tourism in a province that is not often visited like my province, Northern Cape? So, you must be specific. Jefferson, I want to go program by program if you will indulge with me, please, Jefferson. I start this program four, but you said we will later in the year engage with program four specifically. And I would like also, Chairperson, when we speak to a specific slide, that there will be someone at the machine to focus on that slide so that the others can follow what we are saying. Otherwise, the engagement wouldn't be fruitful. Because I keep my pages so that I don't get them a pass. And I want to follow the others that are questioned on a certain slide. So by doing it on there, that's what I think is there. We can follow also the other people's questions and inputs. Thank you, Peter. My first one, Chairperson, is on slide 55 on domestic tourism. And as I said before, you say number two, GDG, number of rural enterprises supported for development. Then you have a baseline. Then you say 1500, 1700, 1800. And you also said that you will do it in collaboration with TAP. The rest of it, the 189, will TAP do that? How do you select your rural entities? What criteria are you using? And what is the impact that you foresee that this selection of a rural enterprise will have on the community? When choosing a rural enterprise, I assume that you will engage with local stakeholders such as the traditional leaders, such as councillors. Then the other thing, Chairperson, I heard a lot, I can't eat, about the acting, did you call it, local stakeholders such as councillors. According to the Constitution, Act of 1996, Section 4, tourism is a concurrent function. And aren't you moving into the competence of local government? What is your relation with local government? You have a lot of workshops with councillors, and one is forever hearing that local councillor is a training workshop and workshop. It's good. That's your person for me. A workshop has no value if there isn't assessment and ongoing assessment and ongoing monitoring and evaluation. A lot of money of the Department of Tourism is given towards workshops. Do we get value for our money? You know our appeal you is domestic travel. And where do we get domestic travelers? At the local government sphere. So we are pouring money, as we say in Afrikaans, in a bottomless pit. There's no end to it. We're pouring money in, we're pouring money in. But as long as there's no assessment, ongoing monitoring evaluation that will go on, and our country cannot afford that. When we pour in money into local government workshops, we have to create jobs. We have to create jobs to erase poverty and unemployment. Now, Chairperson, to Program 3, International Tourism. National Department of Tourism has two initiatives to support South African missions abroad. I don't think they're mentioning it. Slide 52, Petra. They are not mentioning it. And a Chairperson,
isn't it a duplication of the mandate of SAT? Shouldn't you take hands with SAT and ERCO to half of the budget when you are doing this? This capacity building program that you want to do with South African missions, I'd like you to name them, be specific. That's one of the criteria of the SMART principle. I think you are sharing best practices with international competitors. You should use our intelligence if you can't get to it then. Then, what is the role of the World WTO, that's the World Tourism Organization, how are you using, because we pay subscription fees, I think, is it so, to World Trade Organization, how do you use it to enhance not only our international travel, but also our domestic travel? Then, Chairperson, I would like to come to Program 2, and I can stop there if you want to give the other members a chance to engage. I don't want to be selfish. Can I go? Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, Chairperson, we had a lot of parks that they are, slide 43, initiatives taken on World Heritage Sites. I didn't get it from the presenters why they chose Robben Island and Frederford Dome for the first initiative. I would like them to tell us what criteria this is. You see, to be transparent, we have to be transparent. You tell us which criteria did you use it. And then I'd like to know, Chairperson, from tourism, what is our relationship with art and culture? Because art and culture is one of the departments that we work very closely with. Then, Chairperson, on the same type of question with regard to slide 45, the selection of Walter Sisulu Botanical Garden, one initiative, implementation plan for one priority site. Name them, be specific, that is a plan, we can change it. That's what National Treasury says. A strategic plan, a five-year plan, that can be changed. So name them. These are documents for our national and the legacy documents. So they must be as coherent as possible. Sorry, dear, but I want to express myself. Then, I'll stop at this one, Chair. I'll come back. Slide 42. I think I have already asked it. The number of initiatives named as supportive tourism development and growth at local government. Then you say there you have two initiatives. One initiative, capacity building. Capacity building. Never have I read this assessment. Never have I read this monitoring, never have I read this evaluation. And evaluation is very important. Because we should know what the challenges are. And the challenges should be, they should be engaged with in the next year. Why the other initiative is initiated. Thank you, Chair, I'll stop there. If you can give me another chance later on after that answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Let me start by joining my
colleagues in appreciating the presentation. Especially that the presentation also includes organizational risk, because that's an area where you identify your gaps and have a plan to fill up those gaps. I will start by talking to the 11 strategic objectives. Since the President has declared the year as the year of the Freedom Charter, I would like to take the department back to that effect to ask if ever there is no gap in the strategic objectives that address the issue of the Freedom Charter. I am reminded of the clause that talks about ownership and whatever sharing of resources and wealth. Since you understand that this sector has been monopolized for a long time, I will again say, join my colleagues in not understanding the understanding of the department when it talks about the baseline. In my understanding, when you talk of a baseline, it's your starting point where what you already have or what you have already done, that's your baseline. And then you talk about your planning. That's how I understand. I may be convinced if I'm wrong. I will also talk to the big chunk or the big slice of the cake to South African tourism. I'm not clear that chair. But my point is around the three priorities, which is which also include marketing. Are we not duplicating when the new program TIP is also addressing the issue of marketing, whereas SAT is also given that big slice of the pie? This is 1% of the budget. I also want to talk to the question of employment, where there's a mention of 3,080 full-time equivalent jobs. Do those jobs also include the number of jobs that were created by other service providers, like EPP, or is it the department or whoever? Is that number that was presented to us included in this 3,000 ES equivalent jobs? Also, to the issue of the facilitation of capacity building programs that targets practitioners and policymakers. Do those municipalities understand that the department is going to assist them since their end of financial year is around the corner, so that there is no duplication? They don't plan their programs on top of what the department is going to assist them on. The other thing that I wanted to talk about is the tourism offerings. Sorry that I'm not mentioning the slides and whatever. It's the way that I have structured my presentation. On the tourism offerings, there's a bigger slice of the cake that goes to that program. But I'm fearing the value for money issue, because there was that case that was reported under this program. I do not know at what stage it is now on the SRI project. There were those unfinished projects, whatever, what was reported and whatever. Can we be given update on the issue? On the new program TIP, with its three priorities, how will you as the department make sure that everyone knows about the benefits of the program? Now that you have launched the program, how will you be open for new applications, new entrances, whoever is interested, so as to make sure that everyone benefits out of this program? My other take would be around, is a question around the allocation that going back to the department from South African Tourism. What informed that? Why it was allocated for South African Tourism? No, there's an allocation that going back in 2017. What informs that? I think that all our I think that all. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to pick up from what my colleague says when she quoted the President on Freedom Charter, but the President in his State of the Nation address spoke about opening up our oceans economy for trade and tourism. And I did not see any reference made to our ocean economy and also in particularly our very strategic location on the African continent in terms of cruise tourism. Maybe that would be in the detail of one of the programs unpacked here today, but nonetheless, I think it's important to mention that the President did say we need to strengthen our economy, and obviously tourism has an important role to play in that regard. The Deputy Minister, in her opening remarks, mentioned that the Director General is on leave until the end of his contract. And I think, Madam Chair, that perhaps requires some explanation in terms of the contract of the Director General, the length of the contract, when does that contract expire, what processes are in place in terms of filling or going through the interview process to fill that position, and why would the DG be on leave until the end of his contract when it comes to the end of it? Would like to get some clarity on that because it was mentioned this morning, so it's on the public record. The decline from the BRICS countries, the tourist arrivals from the BRICS countries are obviously a concern, and it was mentioned this morning that it's impossible to determine the cost, but I'm sure that through the various mechanisms that the department has available, and also through other partners such as the Tourism Business Council of South Africa, we should be able to determine the cost, because that's if you calculate the loss in terms of those arrivals and revenue spent, obviously it's got an impact on jobs and other opportunities within the tourism industry. So my question would be, what is the department doing in terms of ensuring that we focus on these countries? I know that there's growth from other markets such as Germany, UK, and the USA. I think those are the three markets that we've seen an increase. But India, China, I can't remember the third, Brazil. Those are the three countries where we've seen a decline. I think China was something like 24% decline, and the others in that region. And it's obviously a big concern because we are part of the BRICS countries, and there needs to be more emphasis on strengthening that relationship to make sure that we do not see a decline in tourist arrivals from our fellow partners in the BRICS country or in the BRICS scenario. Madam Chair, there must be a strategy to increase domestic tourism revenue and also to increase domestic tourism volumes. Now, we've seen a decline. I've studied the figures from 2012, 2013, and 2014. There has been a decline in the number of domestic trips. Now, the reality is that it has become too expensive for South Africans to travel in their own country. And obviously, you know, the fact that tourism takes place does not imply that the money trickles down to the poor. And we know that tourism has the ability to really empower communities and provide that much-needed lifeline to many of our rural communities. And the SRI project is one of those projects that really has the ability to make those communities work again and to provide the much-needed opportunities to those areas and specifically the communities that surround those areas. And the failure of the department to deliver or to meet is full-time equivalent jobs under the SRI projects is very, very disappointing. Also, the failure of the department to implement all of its programs and had to return an amount of 78 million rand to the National Treasury is equally concerning and disappointing, because we know that domestic tourism is going to be a major drive. It's been echoed by many of the committee members that that's going to be our major drive because of the growth potential and all of the other opportunity benefits, the beneficiation of those communities. So, Madam Chair, I agree with my colleague to my left that we seriously need to hone in on the SRI projects, find out exactly where did we go wrong, what measures have been taken to fix what's broken in terms of our systems, our processes. I know that there's outstanding orders since 2011 in some of the instances where some of those SRI projects have not been completed yet. So what is the progress in terms of making sure that we do complete those projects, because we can't simply just leave them. We need to fix them, and we need to make sure that we provide capacity to those beneficiaries so that they can see those projects through. So ultimately, that's the aim of SRI. Madam Chair, in terms of page 7, Petra, on the PowerPoint presentation, policy initiatives under point 3 and 4, international tourism management and domestic tourism management, none. I can't recall from the presenter what are the reasons, if there are none planned for those two critical growth markets, international and domestic. If I can just get an answer on that, because by a simple one word, none, creates a question mark for me. And I would just like to know what's the rationale, because those are two growth markets, so obviously there needs to be some focus in that, in those two areas. Page 10 of the PowerPoint, new source markets. My question is whether under point 10, to enhance regional integration, at point 11, to create employment opportunities by implementing tourism projects targeted at the unemployed. There, obviously, the SRI comes to mind. And obviously, number 9, to develop new source markets. I would like to find out whether the domestic travelers have been identified as a new source market, because there's a lot of mention made in the National Tourism Sector Strategy document that's going to go under review soon, that we have to create new domestic markets. The new traveler at the middle LSM level, and on page 26, I've mentioned this previously, one of the key areas where we need to focus on is dealing with the affordability of domestic travel, and obviously one of the outcomes there that was identified is the creation of budget resorts. I also didn't hear that today in the report. Maybe that will come later on when we unpack the domestic tourism part of our oversight, because the creation of budget resorts is critical if we really want to entrench a culture, a travel culture among South Africans. And then we know that there are many of these underutilized municipal and government resorts throughout the country, and that speaks to our tourism sector strategy, and it will also assist with boosting domestic tourism if we get South Africans to move around the country and obviously making use of those resorts, but of making it affordable. On photo page 31, or slide 31, research the needs for domestic tourism. I think that's the first bullet. Conduct research to assist the tourism industry understanding of the needs of the domestic tourism or tourists. That's an interesting one, because that will obviously guide us in terms of our domestic approach. So I just want to ask the department or the official that presented this particular slide, what would the desired outcomes be? When will this research start? And what is the timeline until that the research will come to an end, so that we can use the research to guide us in our tourism strategy? And that ties to my question when it says any planned policy initiatives under domestic tourism, it said none. But that would preempt, because if the research indicates that there's a serious policy shift required in our domestic tourism approach, then obviously that would speak to that. The next one, identified issues of barriers in local government. Now, we know that next week there's a local government tourism toolkit conference. There was one 2 years ago. Now, again, the focus will be on assisting municipalities in developing tourism strategies. But, Madam Chair, the big issue for the years, and I know it's tourism is a local government mandate, and but, you know, the thing is when local governments don't perform and when there's a capacity building or capacity, lack of capacity in municipalities to understand the value of tourism, then the ability of those communities to benefit from tourism also collapses. And therefore, the National Department of Tourism needs to play an active role. And obviously, the Local Government Tourism Toolkit is one way getting the debate going, getting people to share best practice. But there needs to be serious intervention from the NDT as an outreach to those municipalities. And I said to SACS last Friday, and I will say it again, in many parts of our country, we have local tourism bureaus. They are underperforming. We are not utilizing those tourism bureaus to the full potential. Now, I know that there's currently a debate in the industry in terms of the value and worth of tourism bureaus, whether they play a role in a community or not. But I'm a very good, big supporter of tourism bureaus. I do think that they play an essential role in developing products and marketing products and their towns. So they, in many municipalities, when there's funding left at the end of the financial year, they'll give it to the tourism bureau. And, you know, tourism should take center stage in the IDP of every municipality. So when they talk about funding these tourism officers and providing the staff and the training for the staff, that should be the number one priority in the municipality, because through tourism, you create jobs, you create economic development, you create all of the other important benefits. So I think there is something that the NDP could champion, and that's to train tourism bearers to become the champions of tourism in those communities and in those small towns. And then you would be in a position to do route development, because that's also something that we haven't seen today. There needs to be an emphasis from the department to work with our provincial governments and municipalities, and I've looked at the Tourism Toolkit Conference program, and it's not there. And I think I will raise it Monday day, because I think there needs to be an emphasis on route development. You need to connect smaller communities with bigger communities so that you can share the resources. And, you know, we've said often that tourism is not the end journey, it's the whole journey. So when you start, you need to get people to experience all of the various towns throughout an entire route. So in the Western Cape, we've got the Garden Route, the West Coast Route, the Flower Route, and all of these other routes. In the Eastern Cape, they're now developing the Nelson Mandela Heritage Route, etc., etc. But there needs to be an emphasis on route development through the department's planning, to also, because again, that will assist the touristic tourism, so that you can create an excitement for people to go through an entire route instead of only visiting a product. So tourism bureaus can play that role in terms of route development, but you need to train them and you need to show them what to do to use that offer effectively, and not only be an information office, but that it actually becomes an office where there's capacity building for the entire community, so that that bureau sets up a local tourism association, something I haven't seen from your presentation. But at the end of the day, we have to get more tourism associations established in our country, because through tourism associations, you share best practice, you share resources, and you get product development going, and you get marketing going. And those type of associations can only be born from a tourism bureau if you've got that synergy going. Madam Chair, I will leave it at that for now. Yeah, I think I've covered most of it, but yeah, okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much for the questions. I just add a few grains of salt. There's been a lot of training, there's been a lot of workshops, there's been a lot of roadshows, and all those cost the department money. Has there been an impact on all those activities, and has there been value for money on all those activities? I think, in fact, I don't even think it's important for the department to monitor South African tourism around the many areas that need to be covered with so much budget that has been given to South African tourism. Also, it is very important that you are communicating with National Training, NCCE, to actually look at how it has helped and how it has promoted interest in tourism and how it has put tourism on the agenda to be one of the subjects that will be like as law, whatever. It becomes a profession of choice. Because up to so far, it's not clear if tourism is a profession of choice. I think the last one, you are dealing with municipal parks, but would you have a role in communicating or in collaboration with COPCA around the defined municipal resources so that at least they would be made available for tourist attractions either by yourself with COPCA, yourselves with COPCA and us and Qatar, or even with energy around looking into those areas being made accessible for tourist attractions. And finally, TEP has been given so much funding by the department from when? From 2002. Have you looked into the impact that TEP has? What is the impact of TEP? Has there been value for money on what TEP has been doing? When TEP presented to us, they made so many SMMEs, about 350 or more. Have you evaluated those SMMEs? Are they actually functional? We are still expecting them to give us the list of where they are, because they said they are able to access all the provinces where they are, province by province, because this is a national Department of Tourism funding that is going into that. So we would like to get your take in that area. Thank you very much. And I'm sure the Department of Kite and Price to be given so much time to play around. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. I have something under, which I forgot, under domestic tourism. In the document, it is said 100 rural enterprises will be supported. In the presentation, it was said the implementing agent will be TEP. I am now confused, sir, whether here in the document we will be penalizing the department by something that is not done by themselves. Can't in the document they say they will be facilitating the transfer of the 50% to TEP and monitor TEP, because it's TEP who's going to support these rural enterprises. So I'm confused the way it is put in the document. The presentation seem to be correct, but what is in the document is confusing me, because they are not going to implement this as a department. It's TEP, but TEP is not mentioned in the document. We must also thank them for providing these accurate statistics. It's good, we've been longing for this. We will also be interested in the statistics for 2014. This is really a good story to tell. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Much as we want to penalize the Department for Domestic Tourism, we'll have a dedicated period or time when the department will be coming to choose all those issues that we raise. But maybe the department, you'll summarize, because I won't stop you from responding, but we'll give them a dedicated time for domestic tourism. But for what you've written here, please come out very clear. Thank you very much.
We have agreed, Chair, that I'll come later. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. There is a couple of questions that relate to
how we have put together the financial information, which I think CFO will talk to that, issues around the baseline and so on. There's a number of questions that relate to what we do in the international environment, which will be dealt with by DDG Milan, but I would also like to say something with regards to that as well. And then, of course, there's a number of questions pertaining to the domestic environment. Let me attempt to try and provide some of this clarification and other aspects we do note as we progress. Obviously, there is always room for improvement, and I think those things will take into account. Honourable Chairperson and honourable members, please do not be surprised when you do not see these changes in the documents in the immediate period, because we have tabled. So if we change that document and then you start seeing some document which is not on record in Parliament, then it means we are basically misinforming the public, because that document would not necessarily be the document on record. But we do take note of these improvements that have been highlighted. Honourable Chairperson, in terms of the extent of detail that we put, we try to have as much specificity, in particular for the particular year that we're going to do the implementation. During that particular process, you find that there will also be emerging priorities, but also we need to also look at the readiness of a particular environment to be able to start. This would also relate to what was the rationale, for instance, when we considered Freya the Photo, what was the rationale when we considered the Robben Island in terms of the training of the tourist guides. Robben Island stood out completely. It was considered to be the main magnet in the country. It's one icon that is known across the world. If things within Robben Island are in a particular state, that automatically would have a direct effect on the destination overall. So it is one experience that we wouldn't have missed to make sure that it becomes memorable in a pleasant way. So that was really the rationale. But part of that rationale was informed by the fact that Minister has been very clear that he wants to focus on this matter. But in that process of focusing on this matter in terms of destination development, he highlighted three categories that are of focus in the immediate period. First one was the wilderness sites, the second one was the national park, and the third one was the botanical garden. And these gardens actually fall within that particular space. Now, we were looking at the extent to which this would actually, the low-hanging fruit, if I was to put it that way, the most immediate ones, which if something is done, we will be in a position to actually make a visible difference in the most immediate period. And that's why this was elected. With regards to the Freehaven Port Dome, it's a very unique attraction. Of course, it's part of the wilderness society. We've got a focus on those. But most importantly, we saw a very clear opportunity within that particular environment to bring about the element of transformation. The first part of this training of the guides, when someone goes to the dome, they go, they get the guided experience about the dome and so on, but the subsequent experience they actually go through is the river rafting. And we had engagement with different sites, we had engagement with that particular site, we had engagement with Kuno, and the whole idea was that we wanted to see what is actually happening amongst the people within this environment that are providing that particular experience. And we realized that most of the people that are guides, particularly for Freya Photo, they don't necessarily have the level of, so they're general guides. But this is a specialized area, and we needed to make sure that there is that particular experience that is provided in that specialized manner. We have other sites that in future we'll be looking into, and as we progress, then those would also provide us with
you know, proper positioning of food specific sites. But again, I would reiterate that there is a focus on the heritage part. And I'm sure the Honourable, as we go ahead, that the Rakshas Belt and particularly the link to Makati, those are some of the areas that we will be looking into. But we will say things that we will be doing now are things that would make an immediate impact and an immediate difference. And others will depend as we progress. That one element. The municipalities. There are a few aspects about local government. There are challenges, obviously, with regards to capacity, broadly. But most importantly, the people that are dealing with tourism, we realize that if they are not necessarily sufficiently orientated about what tourism is about and how it's actually linked to business of municipalities and how municipalities can contribute, we would forever be in a situation where there won't be any change visible. In the development of the program that we offer, there was a lot of interaction with both SALGA was part of this, COCA was part of this, the municipalities themselves were part of this. And this was part of the results of what came from the conference in terms of some of the value-added aspects that were coming from there. It looks at the business of tourism itself. It looks at the integrated planning issues. It looks at how the people dealing with tourism could best position tourism as an integral part of the development of that particular locality. It also looks at how the municipalities can work together with the tourism value chain within that particular locality, how they can make sure that information is provided and the stakeholder arrangements within that particular environment. And I would say, Honorable Chairperson, that as we do this, because perhaps maybe for feedback, you could even send a member of the secretary to come there and just get a sense of what is this that we're dealing with. We do get mayors who actually then hear about this from their officials, and they decide they will actually come to this so that they can actually get this feedback. So in the end, for me, I do believe that it is something in this, what was clearly proposed and outlined, that we should in future also then solve and be able to see what impact it has made. But the time spent so far has not really allowed for it, because we had had to go for the pilot, and the feedback we got from the pilot was quite good, but we integrated the lessons from that pilot, and now we are at a point, for instance, municipalities from the pilot said to us, please take cases from our municipality, and then let's discuss those as part of what can be done to be able to do these improvements that are being suggested. That has been taken into account, and this is part of what is now actually happening. But, of course, we need to do more. At the point in time currently, these are some of the things that we are able to do. That is why we've got separate online assessment tools. And that is why we've got, in cases of some municipalities that have a specific, very clear, concrete projects that we would like to be assisted around banning and so on, that why the domestic colleagues also come in and actually go into those specific localities. The relationships with other government entities, other agencies, law enforcement agencies on the other side, and agriculture, we have formal relationships with most of these. We have an MOU with agriculture, but these bilaterals that we keep saying, we have these bilaterals, they are quite critical, because they are bilaterals that happen at the political level, they are bilaterals that happen at officials level, and we are able to exchange notes and harmonize how we actually do our work. So there's a lot of copy and tea that we actually have in the process of actually making sure that this integration actually takes place. I'll give you an example. If we're talking about working together with Robben Island, that's the result of a discussion between myself and Vijek on the side of agriculture, where we then say, these are some of the things that we would like to deal with. And then from their side, they say, that's okay. Go ahead and work with Robben Island directly. You can convene a meeting with Mr. Mkhize, the CEO, and these are some of the things that you will be able to do throughout. And they are seeing clear benefit of this kind of relationship. For example, there were a lot of emergencies during the December period, emergencies in terms of bookings and so on and so forth, which required that people put in a lot more time than the usual amount of time they would necessarily do, which affected in some instances very high profile people that were visiting the country, and the impression needed to be quite clear. And I would get a phone call in the middle of the night to say, these guests are here and how do we deal with this? And I would have to make sure that I have to give them cut back and say, well, this is what is doable and this is what we'll then arrange, whether it's a charter or whatever arrangements that can actually be done for them to get into the island. And in the end, it's these little stories that we don't necessarily tell. In this particular instance, the American ambassador was important. He was actually bringing a whole number of other people that were actually coming to the island. And they needed those immediate arrangements. So there is a lot of good working relations, good energy, and we really try and harmonize throughout the entire process. And I think that would actually give us, it's part of our responsibility as cooperative governance dictates that we need to actually work together that way. We have very good working relations with SCPS. This structure that I'm talking about with regards to the National Tourism Stakeholder Forum that looks at NTSS mechanism, we have a representative there that comes from the Commissioner's Office directly. We have on operational issues, we have designated Director of Operations across the country who actually knows what happened at the police station and at police station and from that director for that. So these people are working with us on a daily basis, they are saying, and we have very good relationships with them. Similarly, the cross-border road transport regulation, we work with them in terms of people that would be coming into the country in an attempt to actually come here and guide and so on. So those are some of the kind of arrangements that we actually have. What I heard honorable members calling for is that whatever we do, we must always try and evaluate what the kind of impact it is doing. It is indeed the intention. But of course, resource-wise, we have to take chance by chance. That's why we are saying for next year, the focus is going to be on the FRI projects that have been completed in our operational, and we want to see to what extent there can be more value added within them. So as we go to the next RIA, how are we actually making an impact through this local government training and so on and so forth. So it will be a report on something year after year that actually deals with these kind of issues in terms of the evaluation that needs to be done. The TIP guidelines, they are coming out now in April, but they're going to be outreach. We have started partly in terms of popularizing this way northwest last week, just to highlight what exactly needs to unfold, and people are able to have a better understanding of what are the possibilities and opportunities that would come out of the TIP. We also perhaps we need to also just highlight this one with regard to workshops, roadshows, and all these platforms. We need to reach out to the communities. As I was talking about this, as we're opening, we need to reach out to the communities. We also need to disseminate our information, but we also need to interact with the people that we're serving. So there will be instances where we bring in industry and we want to hear operators, what are the issues and how then are these issues affecting you. So by the time we actually put together this track line and we say there's a need for a dedicated focus on this area or that area, part of this is coming from the interactions that we're having on the ground. And I recall someone was saying to me, if you do not spend time, as much time as possible, listening to the people that you serve. The likelihood is that you're going to prescribe something for them which is not what is going to help them. And I think we try to balance this as much as we possibly can, which is why we now try to, we have changed notes. You have met with your stakeholders, I've met with my stakeholders, and so what are the issues that are coming through? And then we feed through each other's domain so that we are able to actually do the real implementation. I will pass it on to DJ Hampton.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to respond to the capacity building issue first. What I would like to indicate is that before we meet with the municipalities, the traditional leaders, even the LGOs, honorable folks, are part of those capacity buildings, we do a need assessment. They tell us what are the things we would like to be appraised upon, and then go to the experts and force them to come and give them the information. If that, these are the things that we cannot deal with as the department or the provincial department. This also applies to any project that we do in a locality. We don't do this project until it can be accounted for in the IDP. The municipality is ready to say, yes, we'll be able to deal with 1, 2, 3, or won't be able to deal with some of these things. And a capacity building, it can be a 12-month thing and out, because we are dealing with changing the mindset so that they can understand the value of tourism and see the opportunities that will be within their realm. Hence, our engagement with N12, which is an association. We have dealt with Maluti Drakensberg, which is also an association. For 3 years, we are providing them funding to develop that route. And that route also incorporates Lesotho. But what we learned from that engagement is that somehow the communities were left behind. But with the N12, we want to make sure that they must benefit out of the whole route development. And in this instance, as I said, 44 municipalities are found within or along that route, and we are hopeful that they'll be able to come to the fore. Because as we discuss this thing, we'll be dealing with those barriers that we may find in the municipality as indicated in our risk. That the bylaws, they may restrict some of the businesses to really go to the fore. But if they understand as municipal officials that these are the things that we need to, not necessarily is all together, but make sure that if there's a signage application, they need to make sure that it moves quick because it's going to bring some revenue into their space. The other area is on the FTEs. Honorable Masayala indicated that municipalities struggle to calculate the number of FTEs. But what I would like to indicate is that even from our side, the numbers that we give in our documents are coming from the Department of Public Works. They are the ones who are doing the calculations in terms of the budget that's given. So from the municipal side, provincial Department of Public Works are the coordinating point. They are the ones who should be assisting them in that regard. Failure to meet the FTEs, and as that happened, we couldn't be able to access the incentive that is being given for EPWP. The indication that we put some time back was that we did request for us the labor intensity to be reduced. Normally it's around 35. The Department of Public Works reduced that for us to be between 20 and I think it's 30. 30%, hence the reduction of the FTEs, because the issue being is infrastructure-related projects that we are dealing with, but we are classified under environment. So they are treating us as it's a cost issue, as infrastructure is water on the ground. So if the budget, the bulk of it goes to wages, the other side which is to put the structure on the ground, hence the reduction that was done from the department. But besides that, in terms of the training, we struggle to get proper service providers. There's a tender that we
advertised and we couldn't get the proper service provider. So for two provinces, which is Free State and Limpopo, even now we have to redo it again in terms of training. The 3008 that you see is only for EPWP. The TEP jobs were accounted for separately from the 3008. On TEP, over the years, we've been giving them money. Have we received ready for money for that? TEP on their own, they did a study to assess their value. The study is available. We'll be able to share with the honorable member. But from our side, each time when they give us the report, we sample, we're able to pick up. You said you have assisted Murua, and the register that comes, it has telephones and addresses and everything, just to assess, is it true that you've been helped? But besides that, from 2014-15, what we have agreed with them is to only use audited figures. So all the achievements that you see in terms of TEP, they've been audited by Season and Zaliba, so that we don't find ourselves having different fears at the end of the year. So those have also been checked. On the issue of what are we doing regarding the rights of children, it is true that our culture of travel is very poor, and based on our past not to travel that much. And we have to really put programs on the table to make sure that people understand that this is their country, they need to travel. We did a study together with IDC to first check who are these people in terms of the affordability, what they can afford. We found out that most of them are traveling because most of them, they have the stockpile to travel, but the issue is they don't have the information of where are they supposed to be going. So it's a question of we need to come up with documentation per province, if possible, to say, this is where you can go at this rate. Out of that, we requested municipalities and provinces to give us the list of their underutilized properties, if I use that word, which they have done. That was assessed. There is a report that which we still are scrutinizing because we haven't yet gone back to the properties that we identified to say, this is what we see, how can we assist you? But still on that, through the SRI funding, we are assisting municipalities to refurbish some of those resorts, as well as the walking trails. We are assisting them to make sure that there is travel. And as much as we do this thing, we should be making sure that there will be demand by making people to travel. 2 days ago, we had a workshop to deal with the social tourism issues. We had some who are able to take us through what are the discounted rates that they do have. We had the Department of Basic Education, because we were saying, as much as we talk about the lack of funding in us, we need to start it right at the childhood age, if I may use that way. So the Department of Education was saying to us, they have 12.5 million of these learners whom they are ready to can partner with. It's all of us because we don't have, as department, this product. But some parts is ready to host them. We had a resort from KZN called Mufinsi, who is also ready to host them. We had FedAsa, which I haven't spoken to my agency. They were saying they want to revive what they want from to say, if holding during December, people have gone to the coast. How about we bring in people who can travel to be in housing and experience the thing? We had a group of the elderly who are traveling. They were saying to us for this year, they have 25 excursions that they want to do. And they were saying to us, we don't need your money. What we need is for you to tell us where should we go and to really be given that experience. Already we did organize a trip to Mpumalanga in 2013, but looking at the people with disabilities, in this instance, the blind. And that was an eye-opener for us, as well as the area that you have visited.
but still because we fail to mainstream some of these disability issues. The workshop that I referred to 2 days ago invited the people who are deaf. And once they received the invitation, they were asking us, do you have an interpreter? We should overlook. We didn't have an interpreter, and they were not able to come to that workshop. What I want to indicate is that behind the scenes, there are things that we are working on to make sure that when they come to the table, these are the things that are now ready to be convened. Hence, on the policy issues, the average man, of what I said in terms of social tourism, I think Honourable Member can hear that there's something happening. As long as we can get the basic education on the table and we agree and have an ongoing where all of us can engage and make sure that we start with the young children to understand that this is their country, they need to travel. And in future, then we have ready made travel. But for now, it's for us to concentrate on the young people. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I will address the questions that refer to international tourism. I think the answer CFO will speak about. And thank you for the abundant of comments, Honourable Adams. That's what we aim to do, is to try and improve what we are doing. In terms of the mission and training and the danger of duplication, we do that together with SAT. There's a different focus in terms of roles. So we take the lead as tourism. When we started the process in 2012, I must say tourism was almost not existing in the training. And throughout the years, tourism is now the pillar, and we have a permanent slot in the training program. And the slot speaks to tourism, where we have different people that focus on different things. So, for example, we also get the business council, who brings the private sector perspective and what they do in terms of the whole value chain. So SIT, South African Tourism, will focus on the marketing issues, whereas we as a department focus on development side in terms of how do you plan, what is tourism, understanding the value of tourism, understanding in terms of priorities, where do you start. Perhaps you should not start at the top of the pyramid but at the bottom, laying the foundations and those things that doesn't cost all the money. So we aim not to duplicate. But we also have an understanding of each other's role. So in the case where somebody cannot, we take on that responsibility and just do that presentation to make sure that people get the same training. What we also do, there's different modules in our training, what we refer to as modules or segments, and depending on our audience, we also adjust the focus. So it will depend if we are training people that are now being posted for the first time or people that are already in the mission. So we address the training according to that. And mostly to understand the value of tourism and then how do you plan in the mission for this tourism thing that they need to do. We also need to realize that in missions there are also local representatives which might not even have been to South Africa at all. So there's a role for us to bring that kind of training to them. We do it, as I said, together with ERCO, so we target already existing events so that we don't send unnecessary resources in terms of traveling. So where ERCO already has training taking place for, as I said, people that's going to be posted into missions in their 3 months training, or what we also manage to work together with ERCOs when they do quarterly or biannual assessments or of the work that we also come in, and we make use of that opportunity to train with them or to develop business plans with them in the different regions. So our aim is to work with all missions.
So that's why there's no names of missions, because we are saying we are doing basic training for all missions. When it comes to specific assistance, it sometimes differs if it's not a core focus for tourism. In terms of marketing collateral, as I said, a couple of years ago, marketing collateral was not distributed to all missions. That has started now. Where we came in is to say that, you know, which languages should we target, and then adding new languages, so that in specific countries you don't have the necessarily the English collateral which nobody can read, and also in sensitizing the images, you know, the use of which images in specific markets, so that it's not generic marketing collateral because it might not fit into that specific market. In terms of monitoring, we just completed a quick survey with our missions. We are looking at the results to see what the value of this marketing, receiving the marketing collateral is. That will also inform the way forward to see if we're going to change the manner in what we do. Then something else that we work with missions on, and with Durko specifically, is on perhaps an improved, better way of sharing information. We have realized that missions' websites are also not uniform. We have looked at a couple of missions' websites specifically on tourism. You get very good ones, and then you get ones that's really outdated, so we are working with them. They're also busy with a program of re-engineering their website. So what we are, what we have committed ourselves to is to ensure that the tourism content they're on is, that we work with them on that. So those are some of the issues that we work with missions on. In terms of the UNWTO, there's a list of value that we give, being a member of the organization. I'm going to list a number. Firstly, you have access to the knowledge portal or to the e-library, so you have access to all the information and statistics that are available at the UNWTO of all the members, so you have the opportunity to position yourself in the market. You also have the opportunity to participate in the development of new initiatives. For example, when the TSA was developed, South Africa was part of that process. So it's again capacity building, skills development. There's continuous skills development opportunity. So from a capacity perspective, that is where we benefit from. We also get opportunity to share our best practice in some of these workshops. And then obviously there's we can use these platforms, including the regional CAF, Commission for Africa, to drive South African continent interest within the global organization. So those are just some of the initiatives. So there's definitely a benefit for us to be part of that organization, and with South Africa through the minister being on the executive council, that just gives us an additional platform. Honorable first on the BRICS, what we have done, as I said in my presentation, which is very important for us in terms of the opportunity that and the size. When we started with the branch, one of our first priorities was to ensure that we have MOUs with these countries. We don't over-prioritize MOUs. We don't want to sign MOUs just for the sake of signing MOUs. But in some countries, especially the Asian countries, it's important to have MOUs to start the process of working together. We had signed agreements with BRICS and with Brazil and India, but not with China and we had with Russia and India, but Brazil and China we signed in the last 2 years. So we now have signed agreements with all the BRICS countries. The last one was signed last year with Brazil. South African Tourism has country offices in all the BRICS countries except Russia. Russia is perceived to be a difficult market to work in, And that is where our role also comes into, to understand the difficulty of working in that market. Minister just returned from a visit to Russia, so we are trying to see how we can unlock that market to live up to the potential. We get a very small amount of the 52 million outbound travel from Russia. On an international relations level, we worked, I can say, lobbied a lot in terms of lifting the profile of tourism within the BRICS setting. And last year, tourism was then recognized or singled out as an important sector. Soon after that, Brazil introduced an MOU between the BRICS countries on tourism specifically. So there's a bit of a to and fro in terms of negotiating that that MOU. What is important, the next step for us, is to create our aim to create a platform for tourism ministers within BRICS to drive that focus on tourism. So we are in discussion with Russia, who is taking over the chairmanship, and that was part of the discussions that minister had in his travel to Russia. So for Russia, all markets is also all for SAT except for Russia. Russia is an investment market and also only recently in there. And it's mostly because of the difficulty in operating there. TIP, I think DG spoke to in terms of the market access component of TIP, which is not the biggest component of the program. Some of the focus of the access is informed by the work that we are doing, and in cases where SAT is not focusing on a specific country, that's where we then come in to assist in terms of the operation together with the mission. So I think those are all the questions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. On the question of the inclusion of a baseline into our presentation, I agree. We can put it in. I tried on the first slide to bring in the previous years, but I think it's a good idea to bring it into a presentation. So for future, I will do that. On the transfer payments to South African tourism, what we do is, before the start of a new financial year, South African tourism has to provide us with their cash flow requirements for the next financial year. And that cash flow requirements forms then part of the department's cash flow for the 15-16 year. And it gets approved by National Treasury. The approval is also linked to Section 29 of the PFMA, where the department can only request 45% of its previous budget in the first 4 months. That is to allow for the appropriation bill to go through Parliament. Then, after each quarter, there's also an assessment of the public entity, which is then presented to the minister, so that we can monitor the performance, and then also if it needs to be adjustments made to the quarterly payments of our funds, then we will adjust the funding accordingly to that. So we do monitor the spending according to the plan that has also been submitted to us.
Honourable Chair, perhaps just something that I think Rob Evans indicated is that in the case of SAT, we've approached Treasury for approval not to apply that Section 29 in the case of SAT for the marketing part. So my understanding is that Treasury did grant us approval, as was also indicated at last week's session, so that we can move that funds up front. But I think that from our side, we need to make sure that the funds are submitted as to the HESLAs so that they do not run into problem and there is no physical dumping at the end of the financial year.
Honorable Chairperson, there are just two questions that the Deputy Minister requested that I should return to them because we have not addressed ourselves to them. There were other questions which I think it would be best for us to just share that information. It may not necessarily be here. There were questions about our demographic representativity, particularly with regards to women. We may not have the information like right here, but we do have that information. It can be provided. There's a question, Honorable Chairperson, that was raised by Honorable for with regards to the oceans economy. There are some discussions that are taking place with the likes of blue flag beaches and so on. Our interpretation of what the oceans economy entails is broad, is inclusive of other aspects that are already currently taking place. They may not be taking place at large scale. Shark cage diving is already happening. Other forms of diving are also already taking place. Petapini is known for its warm beach, and that's part of that ocean's economy. There's a lot of activity around fly fishing and so on that takes place within our ocean, and what I would call mini boat cruises that are already taking place. Where we still honestly have a challenge as a country is when it comes to these large cruise ships, because the aspects or the approach that our entity, sovereign tourism, if it was to play in some space like that, in the end would not, at the current point in time, would not necessarily yield immediately. And it would also present a challenge because the policy environment still needs to be harmonized. We need to work on that policy environment. And it includes matters that in other countries also they are grappling with. There were articles about the U.S. on the same matter as well. It's a question of registration status in the country, as it is. It's a question of paying taxes towards the country. It's a question of local employment and also local procurement with regards to the things that are sourced and so on. But if those things policy-wise are not yet resolved, we risk highly marketing those good ships at the expense of Africa. We market it to our own people. We then put our own people into those ships and we ship the money out. They will come back, offload them, and that's basically what will be happening. But once that policy environment and all the investment in the country actually flows into that, at the moment, we don't necessarily have money that could go up to that level of scale. But in terms of the policy environment, these are discussions that within that particular, such discussions are taking place to be able to get to the desired state. And after that, then the environment is conducive for the investments to come through. And that would most certainly be able to get us to what would really be servicing South Africans out there. But all these other things that I mentioned on the side, the blue flag speeches and so on, those are things within our reach we are able to actually deal with some of those. The other aspect is there was a question about, is there a duplication between South African tourism and the Department of Tourism? The answer is no. There isn't a duplication. There is complementarity, and then this complementarity must be there because South African tourism is our entity. It takes policy directives from the department in terms of what it is supposed to implement and how some of these things must actually benefit the destination overall. Now, what is this complementarity? Because I think there is certainly, and I mean, outlined some of this, but there are things that SAT may not be able to do. pure international relations work, they cannot do that. So the bilateral engagement between governments, that is not a role they can play. They are not empowered to do that. They are not mandated to do that. So that becomes the role of the department. Will there be some things there that would benefit SAT? Yes, there will be, in those bilateral engagements. And where we need them, we would also bring them on board and say, these are some of the things. But when you develop a new market, there's a number of things that go into that, and there's that collaboration that must always, because you've got to have a good understanding of the views of that particular market about the country. And once you've got that understanding, some of these views may pertain to perceptions about the country, some of them may pertain to our own policy framework, some of them may pertain to travel facilitation between the two countries and so on. Do we have air transport bilateral agreements with those countries? Do we have arrangements of designating charter arrangements within those? And these are issues that, as a department, we have to deal with. And we've got to take these issues to the License Pattern Transport, or to DERCO, or to Home Affairs, and so on. So there is complementarity. Of course, the end goal in mind is one. And that's why sometimes it would sound as if, but are you not pursuing the same agenda? Yes, we must pursue the same agenda. But there are different roles, and the different role players must get us to the ultimate end, which is that goal of bringing as many people here as we possibly can. So an example of Russia, which she spoke to eloquently, is in that particular context. An example of the United Arab Emirates is within that particular context. And many more still to come. But we get this, we gather that information, we are able to actually have a better appreciation of how best we can assist SAT to achieve maximum possible results. And that's basically the role of the colleagues within this particular project. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chen, honorable members. And to respond to some of the points that have been left out and possibly add on some others, to say to honorable members, monitoring evaluation is very key, and we also have realized that that as a department, to an extent that we even have a monitoring and evaluation unit within the department that looks into evaluation of our programs, those that we do within the sector, on the project, which is something that we've learned over the years, and also being part and priority of government to really look into what impact our programs are doing out there in terms of what we are required to achieve at the end of the day. Much as the fact that it is not yet evaluating on everything, but it has started to really put highlights onto ensuring that within the department we do monitoring and evaluation of our program. And just to say around the issue of this menu workshop, I think Vita did mention to say when we became the general department of tourism, we had to really go out to create as much more awareness on targeted fronts. And at the moment, if I may just use the example of the National Tourism Career Expo, we do see progress and impact in terms of what has happened. For instance, in terms of the awareness at school level, it has really created that awareness, and there's a lot of things that we have picked. If I may just say, we cite one thing where tourism is often taken as one subject when your science and mathematics teachers are not there. So over the time, once we appreciated that there were more and more schools that are offering tourism as a subject, but we picked a shortcoming to say, in fact, math and science students need to be encouraged to take tourism as a business, because we want them to also be financial people in tourism, we want them to be managers, we don't want them to just take tourism as a byway. So it has created a spot to their doorstep to understand what the careers are within the field and stimulate.
articulated and to look big when looking into Georgia. So we have more of learners now coming out of the system up to particularly really looking forward to be part of Georgia. But also it has created an opportunity for empowering educators themselves, because educators just shifted into tourism without any training, so it has created opportunities. So we can see educators work with content in terms of what they have to teach in schools. But also we have even gone further into the curriculum at the TVET college level, and we can see that accrediting those training courses within those. So we count that as a success and impact of that. But also, where young people, unemployed graduates of the tourism industry, because all of them then, as those who participated, they would find ways to get into the database, and they are pulled from that database to benefit from learnerships, from internships, from these placement programs that we are running. So that for us is it is what we are able to learn. And from the last MTCE, we brought in and highlighted the SMME development so that we channel them not only to look for employment but also starting own businesses. So I'm saying gradually, for every program that we do make some assessment. Just also to add on some of the successes around, in terms of our impact, looking into the impact, with the end of the of the contract that we had with the Tourism Enterprise Program, of which we just extended for a year, the department is conducting a study on the overall SMMEs, not necessarily the TET ones, but including those that TET has touched over the years, to look into what is it that we can do and what is our way forward. So that the period within which TET has been extended would be the period within which that study or that review is happening, so that it channels our way forward moving beyond the period of extension of the TED. So it forms part, therefore, of an assessment and evaluation of the work that we are doing. Chair, if I may step off on this, I think we started indicating earlier on that the statistics that you are reflecting on only came in yesterday. So it was just high-level reflections, and we'll get into some of the aspects that honorable members were reading as we do our assessment, and hopefully moving forward we'll be able to share with the honorable members. And then on the issue of the SONA and declaration of the year of the Freedom Charter, much as we have not put it glaringly, so we look into the program as to how they talk to ensuring issues of ownership, ensuring issues of development, where we were mentioning of making sure we have women as part of management of some of. So those programs for us, if we may have to come back here, we can highlight today which programs would talk to this particular aspect. But we think within the overall of what we're doing, there are programs that are reflecting on the Freedom Charter as we are attempting to respond to the government priorities. Chair, if I may also talk to the issue of the Director General, much as we may not be in position of or be able to present too much detail, yes, because those are processes that also run within the institution, but just to say confirm that indeed the Director General's term or contract is supposed to come to an end by the 31st of May, and Perhaps you may have noted that in the Bureau of Building up to today, the Director General has not physically been present in our meeting because before this latest development, she had a medical procedure. So she you was away from work from contact, but consultations have happened with the relevant bodies until the time that there was this agreement between the Director General and the Minister that he be on special leave until the end of the term and end of the contract, because out of those consultations, it was also agreed that the contract will, or it was communicated that the contract will not be renewed moving forward. So there are those details that are within those discussions that we may not be in a position to divulge in this meeting because they are more to do with governance issues than issues of portfolio committee, but for information that is that members require, we think we have tried to respond to it. And then I think we have taken note of the issues around the outstanding information on the SRI investigation and how therefore it would link with the other programs that we are doing, and that report is, I think it still needs to come to the portfolio committee so that we look at it. But I can assure honorable members that even in the Imbizo week that is upcoming in the week of the 10th of April. Upcoming Imbizo week where the government Imbizo week where the National Department of Tourism will also be launching some of the SRI projects. We have incorporated some of the lessons that we have learned as we are dealing with the SRI programs within the department, and we are happy that the honorable members have that information already, hopefully that they will join us so that we also have physical experiences so that we can see honorable members can also be able to see if we are really implementing what we say we are implementing as part of the lessons out of the SRI. I don't know. I think let me stop the honorable members. I hope I have tried to cover some of the areas that we could not touch. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Department, for your response. But what I said in the beginning, that will be giving you a task that maybe previously you didn't have. We would like to have a look at your quarterly report. We are going to be reporter inviting you to give us your progress on the quarterly report. The main reason that we would like to have that taking place is because there are some areas of understanding. So let us know what those are and how best you could they would be dealt with. So we'll be calling you for the last and the quarter report in the near future, not with the program of the second quarter, but we'll try to have the third quarter to have all of you feeling that program and yourself, because we really would like to know how are you progressing on the financial front. So they should also be addressing the issue of auditing capacity and the rest of them. I think that's the homework or the assignment we're giving to the department, because we were told and we've read from the latest report that you've only been reporting twice a year.
but this time we would really like you to do like other departments to report quarterly so that you don't end up with SCOPA. It was not nice to go to appropriations, but you don't end up with SCOPA because there are very bad restrictions on tourism. And I think both the members, my fellow committee and department, you had a fair share of giving us what's in your pot. And I think we've done adequate interrogation around that. And I thank both the committee and the department for the contributions made here too. Thank you very much. I'm not sure whether they brought lunch, but if they have,